of Central Tablelands Water Council. Thank you all for your attendance. In opening the meeting, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting today and on which all our constituent councils have their local government areas, the Wiradjuri people, pay respects to their elders, past, present and emerging, and acknowledge the custodianship over many, many decades, tens of thousands of years of the land and waters which we now occupy. This meeting is being recorded, and a tape recording of the proceedings of this meeting will be available on Council's website within a couple of weeks. Item four on the agenda is apologies, but before I get to apologies, I'd like to propose that we have one of our councillors, Councillor Nash, is present by audio-visual means, and it's necessary for us to pass a resolution agreeing that Councillor Nash can participate in the meeting by audio-visual means. So I propose that we allow Councillor Nash to attend by audio-visual means. Someone like to... I'll move that, seconded by Councillor Cook. All those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. I declare that carried, and welcome to the meeting, Councillor Nash.
Thank you.
You're coming through loud and clear, which is good. Item five, confirmation of minutes from the previous meeting, which was our December meeting. Those minutes have been circulated. Would someone like to move we accept those as a correct record? Councillor Rawson, seconded Councillor Ewan. Thank you very much. Those in favour?
Aye.
That's carried.
Aye.
Are there any matters arising from those minutes not otherwise on the agenda which anyone would like to raise? If not, we will move on to item seven, disclosures of interest. Have we had any disclosures of interest?
No, Mr. Chair.
No disclosures of interest, thank you. Public forum, I believe we have no public forum. No, thank you, so we move on from public forum. Item nine is Chairman's minutes. I've taken the opportunity actually to produce the Chairman's Minute for today, and I'm sorry I haven't had an opportunity to circulate it because I only fairly recently typed it up. But I will send it round. I'll read it onto the record, and I'll provide a soft copy for the purposes of the minutes. Thank you. So, the following is my Chairman's Minute for this meeting. I'd like to take the opportunity of this Chairman's Minute to formally confirm that I will not be contesting the election for Chair later in this meeting. I've had the privilege of serving as Chair of this special organisation for the last 10 years. Now's the time to hand the baton on. Renewal of leadership is healthy for any organisation. We are all custodians of the original bold concept of visionary councillors from our region who conceived the idea of building a dedicated town water dam high in the Lachlan catchment and supplying potable water to towns and villages throughout the region. The scheme, in fact, had its origins much earlier. Shortly after Federation, one of the shortlisted sites for the new national capital was centred on Lyndhurst. According to a speech to members of the House of Representatives in 1903, the water supply for the proposed capital was to be Cooming Reservoir, holding over 18 trillion gallons, or 87 gigalitres in today's terms, and situated 250 feet, or about 76 metres, above the new city and providing water for an anticipated population of 160,000 at 100 gallons or 380 litres per person per day. It was back on the agenda in 1938, pioneered by Councillor F.C. Rowlands of Woolgoolga Shire, now part of Cowra Shire. It took 6 years of lobbying and many knockbacks before the county was finally proclaimed in 1944. It was 4 more years before construction of the dam commenced, and almost 7 more years before the dam was full. That was obviously a fairly dry period. At its peak, the county had 11 constituent council members. Council mergers and the withdrawal of Parks, Lachlan and Carra reduced the number back to the current 3 by the early 1990s. The challenges that faced the pioneering councillors are similar to those we face today. The concept of an urban water authority spanning multiple local government boundaries does not sit well in today's planning and regulatory environment. The challenge is funding infrastructure over long distances with sparse population means the cost per connection is high. The original county received government subsidies for the construction of the scheme. Today's economic rationalists tell us that the users must pay. CTW is an extraordinarily efficient organisation and is able to deliver quality water to its customers at a similar price to much more closely settled regional centres. This will always be the challenge until community service obligation payments replace upfront capital grants. But with strong and effective leadership and focused strategic thinking both at council and staff levels, CTW should be in a sound position to deliver on its vision of being an independent regional water authority, providing a quality water supply reliably and sustainably. I would ask that this chairman's minute be noted.
Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. We will move on to item 10, councillor representation.
Is it appropriate for now, David, to say thank you very much for your time as chair?
That can come at some other time.
It's appropriate.
Thank you.
We'll get it in a moment.
Thank you very much. I thought the opportunity of a chairman's minute was probably the best way to sort of get on the record, but yeah. I'm going to hand the baton on. Councillor representation. As usual, I guess I'll go first here. On the 18th of January, I gave a brief, this is probably a CTW representation because I'm on the JO as a CTW rep. I gave a briefing to the chief executives of all the joint organisations in the state on changes to the structural arrangements for joint organisations. On the 25th of January, there was a JO meeting of the water portfolio mayors. On the 8th of February, I attended as alternate for Councillor Nash the meeting of the audit committee. And on 13th of February, the general manager and I attended a public hearing of the joint select committee on protecting local water utilities from privatisation held out in Dubbo. That's all from me. Any other councillor representations to be recorded?
Not since the last
meeting. No?
I was just thinking that school thing, but I think that
was
before,
that was prior to the last meeting. Yeah.
Okay, if there's nothing further, we will move on. Item 11, notices of motion.
I haven't received any notices.
No notice of motion. Move on to item 12, reports from staff, 12.1. First item on the agenda is the election of a chairperson and a deputy chairperson. For that person, I'll hand over to the general manager as returning officer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as the chair has just alluded to, unfortunately, he's not going to stand again for the chairman's role. I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but maybe for me, I'd just like to thank Councillor Somerville, or the Chair, for all the support he's provided me and the organisation over the last 10 years. Really have appreciated it, and I've learned a lot too under your guidance. So thank you, and I really have appreciated it. And I'm speaking on all of the staff members of CTW, and I'll leave it to the new chair to thank you on behalf of the councillors, but I just wanted to say thank you, and I really do appreciate the contribution you've made to our organisation over a long period of time. So,
thanks, Gary.
So moving on, so we're just holding the election of the chairperson and deputy chairperson. We sent out nomination forms with the business paper. I'll do the first one is the nomination of the election of the chairperson. I've received one nomination for chairperson at this stage. Was there any other nominations? No. As I've only received one nomination for chair, I duly elect, and that's Councillor Andrew Rawson. I duly elect Councillor Rawson being the chairperson of the CTW. This will be until the cancellations on the 14th of September. So, congratulations, Andrew.
Congratulations.
Okay, moving to the next nomination, or the next position, it's the deputy chairperson. I've received one nomination today, and that's from Councillor Cook. Are there any other nominations for the position of deputy chairperson? No?
No.
So, we've only received one nomination. I duly elect Councillor Michelle Cook to the position of deputy chair for CTW until the 14th of September 2024. Congratulations, Councillor Cook.
Thank you.
So, with that...
Before we finish, we probably need to move the recommendation that we adopt the ordinary system of voting. Which we've just done.
Done. Yeah. Okay, so get a mover and seconder for that, please. Thank you. Councillor Rawson, Councillor Cook. And now I'll hand over to the newly elected chair to run the meeting. The meeting.
Thank you so much, Gavin. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everybody initially for their support for me as the new chair. And particularly to formally thank Councillor David Somervale for his 10 years in the chair, and for all of the work that you've done over that period of time. Hopefully you get an opportunity to catalogue all of the things that you've done and the projects that have occurred over that period of time. Clearly, CTW is in a good position. You're leaving it in with a good team in place, and you've made this decision to pass on the baton, which is fantastic. And I'd just like everyone to thank you for all of your hard work, and I look forward to working with you for a little while longer. And beyond that as well. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I didn't make a comment too.
Yeah.
Just thanks, David, for all your time as the chair. I think people in the room should realise how well respected you are within the region for all the work that you put into regional water infrastructure and regional water. And I think that's something that we should all know. David's very, very well respected, and thank you very much for all your effort.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks very much, Paul. And you will certainly, after me, the longest serving councillor, you've seen more than most.
Yes.
Molly?
Would anyone else like to say?
Well, I'm on the front. Just thanks, David. Yeah, thank you for your help, and thank you for your contribution to Central Tasman's water.
Thanks, Molly.
Nothing more. Okay, we'll move on to item 12.2, which is meeting times and dates. Those are listed there. Gavin, would you like to make any comment about those meeting times? They are slightly different to our usual dates, usual times.
So, through you, Mr. Chair. They are slightly different. They're similar to last year's dates. They are, in the past, we have had them on the second Wednesday of every second month. However, in discussions with Peter, our Director of Finance and Corporate Services, as well as Noel, Director of Operations and Technical Services, to meet our statutory reporting requirements, and we did this last year, as I said, as well, we have pushed some of those dates out to allow more time to get the budget ready, to get our OP and our documents ready, our financial statements. So that's why they have been last year and this year. Now, the next 12 months, we've proposed to push those dates out. slightly to meet those statutory reporting requirements. And we also look at our constituent councils to make sure there's no clashes there with constituent council meeting dates, and we've done that, and there's no clashes with the, our constituents.
I think the third of people I've responded about might
be you may not be able to make a budget, the budget meeting.
Which is a bit of a problem with the budget, but I think I get back to straight on that day.
Maybe I'll put out a bit earlier some information. If you provide us with some feedback for that workshop, we'll take that into consideration at the workshop.
And I guess that date is set in concrete, really, is it? You can't modify that. In fact, that month, the 24th of April is a little difficult for us, for the Pagon people, so Marlene and I, because that is literally the day after our meeting. And so there'll be two lots of business papers all in one. It doesn't matter to me, really. I'm happy to do it that way, if that's the most suitable way.
Well, it just allows time. Peter can talk to this or add to it further. We do the workshop a couple of weeks before the council meeting, so we've got enough time to get the budget, obviously, together to put the council to endorse, to go on public display before we adopt it in June. Peter, was there any other flexibility there?
It's very difficult that day because the following day after that is Anzac Day, I think.
Indeed it is, yes.
So we also had planned, there's a board initiative that statewide put in for enterprise risk training, and I thought this was an opportunity to take advantage of that board initiative. So we're arranging on the 24th to actually have a statewide representative there and go through enterprise risk management, some of the basics of it. I know we've done the risk appetite, but I thought it was an opportunity to build on that. I understand that some general purpose councils may have already done it, but I thought it was an opportunity to sort of to look at that and sort of build on our risk appetite profile that we did and take it there. So we were planning to have those. It's going to be a pretty big day, Mr. Chairman, but that's the reason we selected that day. It is a bit hard with that one too. If you bring it forward, it just makes it a little bit harder to get all your documentation and all together, particularly when you've got the budget workshop on the 3rd of April, although I may this year circulate the councillors to just get some feedback on some big issues like our fees and charges prior to that meeting, so we don't have a situation where we get there on the 3rd and people say, well, what do you propose to do? This is what I propose, and we say, now, I've got a slightly different view. I want to take this a different way. I think it's an opportunity to do that. It's just that gives us a bit of extra time. The months of April and August are the two where we've got the statutory push, we've got the financial statements as well. That's when we push that one back a week as well to give us an opportunity to be able to sign the council certificates and refer it to audit. And that one on the 24th was because of the basically because of the budget and up in. I think we had it the 16th the previous year, and that was a pretty tight sort of timeline. I appreciate that's nearly made me aware that it's a day after the Gabon meeting. Yeah, it is a bit unfortunate, but
just two lots of business papers all together. Look, it's not a huge deal. I'm not sure about what Marlene thinks about it.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, Andrew, but it's fine.
Oh, thanks, Peter. Thanks, Gav. Look, I'll put that. Are there any other concerns or issues about the dates, those dates? No? Well, I'll put that. Is everyone happy with that?
Yeah, we just need to
move and shake.
Move and shake.
You'll get used to it.
I'll get used to it. anyone like to move that?
Thank you.
I'll move it.
Councillor Ewan got in first, and so seconded by Councillor Nash. And all agreed?
Yep.
Okay. Carried. Okay. The item 12.3 delivery program progress report. Devin, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. This is a six-monthly reporting requirement for the delivery program progress report. Under our suite of IPNR documents. So it just lists, I've got the traffic lights in there, and I apologise for the although on your screens you could probably see it a lot bigger, but the formatting, and the Chell has assured me that she'll improve on that formatting for the next reporting period. So this is just reporting on our activities or our strategic priorities as well as our activities under those priorities on a 6-monthly basis. So we've got traffic lights in there, so you can have a quick look to see how we're progressing. A lot of them are ongoing, and we had this conversation there 6 months ago with the formatting, and more of the traffic lights could be green or partly green, but it's about that formatting issue. As I said, we've left a lot of them orange because they are progressing or they are ongoing, and but we are moving forward. So I've got the comments in there in the far right column there. If anyone had any questions of our activities and how they're progressing, please let me know.
Does anyone have any issues they'd like to make comment on?
I did make the colours of the traffic lights. We've got a lot of oranges, and I think some of them could be greens that we have completed, like the first one, you know, the toilet room, the water tank, Woodstock is actually done, but we're not picking that up. So I think that's just a list together, as a team.
Through you, Mr. Chair, we've just left it as orange because we've got a couple of projects or capital works that we haven't quite completed yet, as in the renewal projects. So we've got a couple of those outstanding, that's why we haven't completed yet around this stage. If councils are happy, if we've got majority of it or 90% of the capital works for that year completed, we're more than happy we can change that to orange.
If we're talking road signs, do we need to turn them with good care?
You're pretty emotional. I mean, I guess one way of getting around that would be to have multiple traffic lights in each of these items. Obviously, each of these items refer to a specific component of our planning, but there are sub-components, and we could indicate, for example, that, you know, green for that first component with a 12-minute MEC, res, orange, amber for the rest. That could be one way of doing it, rather than having a single traffic light for a single
activity. Yes.
Are there any other comments or concerns or... Okay, I'd like to... Would anyone like to... put that as noted, as the recommendation is that we note that delivery program progress report as of December 23. Councillor Cook has put that. Any seconder? Councillor Ewan? And I'll put that to the council. In favour? Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Thanks, Molly. And we'll move on to item 12.4, levels of service update report. The recommendation here is that council note the levels of service update report. Gavin, would you like to speak to that as well?
Through you, Mr. Chair, and I'll defer to Noel as well. Noel's been heavily involved in this, as well as being our assets officer. But first I'll just give a brief outline on the progress today. Here's the... our asset officer, Ben Hughes, with us today, has been working very closely with our software professionals, the asset support mechanism there, with developing soft forms to be trialled in our system with our operators. So that's trials currently being undertaken by our Canoundra staff, and then once that trial is completed, line out any bugs, and then that's obviously successful, then we'll roll it out to the rest of the network. So with that, with those soft forms, it's about gathering information in the field and then uploading that into our system, into our asset management system. But Noel or Ben, do you want to add anything further to that and how that trial is going? Or?
The biggest issue that we've had in reporting levels of service is time frames. You know, we put things down that we will adopt levels of service for major breaks within a 2-hour period, and if not major, it'll be a longer time frame. And that's always been the problem that we've had, is how do we actually report that from the staff out in the field to be able to bring those levels of service to give some sort of verification to. So as we reported back, we looked at the capability of our existing system, noting that that system did not provide us with that information. So that's why once we found that the capability of existing systems couldn't do that, we went ahead and with further development to try and get the priorities would be for looking at GPS location. So therefore we know where we are. That's a verification that somebody is standing at that point. And this all is generated from a photograph. So if somebody is there, we take a photograph of the actual the location and what the problem is. So then we can say, off that photograph, we are providing a date and a time that we have attended for there, as well as the GPS location to say exactly where that point was. So that's been the benefit. So that's the outcome that we needed to have to bring that information and do our comparisons to say this was available within a certain time. So these are all the soft forms on the phone. So we're moving forward with the IT to provide apps to generate those sorts of things. Now, once we have that information, the outcome, as I could say, the outcome of this beta form was to ensure that we got that information back into our system on the time they took the photo and it got updated, which will be automatically updated. Then we can do some smarts around when did the phone call, when was the phone call taken. So if I make an example of after hours, when was the phone call taken? So there will be a spot to say when was the phone call taken. The person that's on call is attending it, he only looks, needs to look back at his phone and say it was, he took the call at XYZ. Okay? So now having that outcomes and being able to provide that back into our system, now we can generate reports to make sure that we are achieving those levels of service that we couldn't provide verification for in the earlier times. All right. So this will roll out now, and we're finding benefits of what we're putting forward. The reason why we've rolled it out to Canberra, they've been heavily involved in our earlier rollout of soft forms. Some people are more energetic and enthusiasm in moving, and this is one way we thought we will do a beta testing of this in that area, and once they find out the bugs, then we can talk to all of our depots and roll it out with something there instead of others trying to put little bits and pieces in. So we've staged it in a way that we're getting that feedback from the people that are using it, even though it's only at one location at the moment.
And the feedback is good, they're happy with?
I'll refer that to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the moment we've got Andrew Pulley and Dave Birmingham. They've been very, very enthusiastic about getting this up and running. At the moment we're looking at just trialling hydrant checks as a function of this program. So the idea is they'll take the phone out, they'll go to hydrant, snap a photo, and like Noah said, it'll take the GPS quarters. Now, the key thing there is that we don't need the mobile network for that. So if the operators are out in the middle of the paddock, and they have to try and get a sewer connect, location on a junction or a certain point, it's through the GPS system, which is satellites, and that's always there.
Yeah.
Failing that, the data can still be recorded on the phone locally, then we get back to the mobile service, automatically sync with the network to upload that data. So we've captured the key part of the process, which is the GPS call
and the GPS.
The evidence. So the network operators are a key part of this program. They're the first to be on the scene, they're the first to do the roles and to undertake work. So therefore they've all got their mobile phones. So the key part of this whole program is you take the photo. Everything will be orientated around taking that photo because the picture tells 1,000 words.
Yes.
And then from the background, a whole lot of steps, a whole lot of information being gathered. So it's not as if the operator has to punch in GPS coordinates down to 10 or 12 different digits or anything like that. No. We want to free them up. We don't want complicated alerts. So they turn up on site, they assess it, open up the phone, take a photo, who's the operator, do the take five, work out, and this, they also look at who's another operator, or it could be a case of, had to turn the mains off, I'll come back tomorrow morning because it's 1 a.m. That sort of stuff, and it will log, as Noel said, when we get the call, I've got the call at 12:30, on site at 1 o'clock, that sort of information. And that will feed to a central point, like a triage in our system. So what the idea is, we protect the data network, that's the ultimate goal, is to protect that. So if there's any corruption or any data that's not quite kosher, as they say, then we'll review it, we'll assess it through the triage, so whether I have a look at it and say, right, well, for example, if they take a picture of a hydrant in the middle of a paddock, but the operator said, no, it's on Main Street Blaney, obviously there's some sort of issue with satellites or technology, and it happens. So that's fine. We built this specifically to put that stopgap in the network, in the process, to say, right, the network's taking the data, we've got oversight or review of it, once it's been verified and we're all in agreement, then we can upload it into the network. Another point, too, is that if the network is corrupted for whatever reason, at that point when we've uploaded the data, we know that that network, or the information integrity of it, was fine at that point, so we can roll the system back if there's any error. So we're not going to lose the network, we're not going to lose the data that's already in there. We've got multiple steps to ensure that the data and the integrity of it is 100% at all times. Because if we don't have that data, we have nothing.
No, this sounds like a great improvement. So the feedback is great from the guys using it.
Absolutely, they are dead keen. The two boys, they are dead keen. They said they can't wait for this. We've given them brand new phones, so we've got Android work phones with shockproof cases. So they look, it's a tool, absolutely. So we're trying to give them the best tools we can, tools that work, and the tools that allow them to get the job done. So they can log in, they can get their photos. So you can have a look there, just as an example. So the GPS is always on, or you can turn it off, so you can go out to the field. If you just want simple data, where's this hydrant, where's this location, you can pull up the maps, draw a ring, everyone's familiar with maps on their phone. If they need to capture data, then you tap the GPS and the phone will automatically shift to that point where that phone is. Now, the accuracy of the phones is down to about 1 metre, or half a metre to 1 metre accuracy. The Trimble unit that we have, it's down to 0.01 centimetre. But realistically, with the assets we're dealing with, an operator's going to know where that meter is. An operator's going to know where that hydrant is. Yeah, it might cover with wash or soil or whatever in time, but they'll know, hang on, because we have such long longevity for our staff, they know I put that in 5 years ago, or I'll put that at a certain point in time. They'll get the GPS coordinates and they'll give them and they'll find it. Then they'll take the photo, do the maintenance, record the data, and that way if someone comes along and says, hang on a minute, I tripped over your hydrant at such and such street, oh, when was that? What date? What time? And we can pull up the data and say, hang on a minute, at this point, date and time, we did the maintenance, we cleared it, we put bright yellow paint on it, we made sure it was safe, it was at ground level, everything's fine, so we don't know what you're talking about. Or we deny your claims as such. So it's also evidence-based as well. And that's something we haven't been, like Noel said before, haven't had the ability to capture that level of data before.
The thing I like about it too is you take the photo first when you get to a job, so if it's sort of hydrant or broken pipe, whatever it is, or a leaking meter, they take the photo at the start so you can see the foreshot, so to speak, do the work, and then take the photo after that. So you've got that, there's no coming back, and you haven't been to do that work. Or if they haven't been, we can see, we can follow it up.
So this will cover dirty water complaints, everything basically, won't it?
Any of them call out? Yeah. If I have to call out, this is where we're rolling out. So if I go back to my original statement, the outcome of this beta cyclone that we generated, we looked at hydrants because we have massive amounts of hydrants within our system and they all need to be checked as a regular maintenance period. We've gone from all different areas. We had one card for one hydrant to say what was done and the date that it was done, so it was all manual. We've then gone to using our infrastructure intranets to put paper copies out to say streets where we mark on them what's being done. It's really labour intensive, it's paper, you try to follow through. Concentrating and looking at trying a similar outcome of recording, if we look at the hydrant, but boys, we can tell what's been done all the way through. It goes, and it's not paper that comes back to Ben to put in our asset maintenance. It's the true value.
It's the true value of the data and goes straight
in. And that data is given to Ben on that time frame, on the time. Yeah, so there's no delays. Now, we can then roll that out once we, as I said, the assessment for levels of service was always, can we capture that data and how can we have that? So the outcomes is saying that we can do this. Now we can roll it out to, say, meter changes, for instance, where instead of you've got your old meter there, the boys go. Another really good aspect of us with these soft forms, we can cover off our work health and safety with a little soft form on the front as part of before you start work, take your photo, this is where you are, and then you tick the boxes that you've done a little Take 5 assessment. Mm-hmm. So that covers that up. And again, it's not just generated back as paperwork, which stacks up and up. It's in the system that goes to bed, so we can be audited on what do we do with our jobs, how to work health and safety is performing. There it is all there. So it's the flow-on effects that hydrant maintenance goes, and as I said, for the next one will be meters, changing the meters out, and that then will automatically be generated, sent straight to the girls, as well as to Ben. So none of this time lag waiting for the sheets to be filled before we send them off up from, say, Greenfield or Canberra back into the office. So,
through Mr. Chair, we've also had, as I understand it, interest from other counties or other local water utilities on how this is going and how we're rolling it out. So, once we've got it down pat and bugs ironed out, it's something we can share with other utilities.
Fantastic. And presumably, it would be able to populate the tables that we receive at the end of this report about the end of our business papers. So all of that information about what has occurred in each location, I mean, that it could just directly populate that. Correct. Without having to do that by paper, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
So counting up how many, how many times it's gone out.
Yes. Yeah. So the generation of our reports will be aligned with our annual reporting that we need to go back with DQ or DQ, where they are now. Any of our interim reporting that's needed, including council reports. So, the verification of things, that's one of the things that we need to concentrate. I'm just talking in general now. There's a lot of effort going into water quality and the data that's been provided. I'll stop talking, it's a bit of feedback. So, health, this will be another aspect that health can verify. This is verifiable, the systems that we've got in place. So it's taking away the paperwork trail and having to generate reports. So any time we have an audit, it just goes to Ben. The soft forms are there. What do you want to see? There it is.
Look, thank you. Oh, sorry.
I just have one question.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I'm just thinking about the new laws with the right to disconnect. Now, I know we pay our staff on call rates, but I think that's something you might have to look at where those reports are going, at what time. If you get a call out, as you said, at 1 o'clock in the morning, and that report's going through, you might have to think about that right to disconnect law.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Like I said before, what will happen is the guys get the call out, that won't change. We need to have that capability to do 24-hour service. What happens when the boys arrive on site, they take their photo, that generates the information, will go to, say, the cloud, and it will sit into like a bin tray or a triage. I'll come in the morning. I'm not required to be on 24/7, that's not my role within the organisation. I come in first thing in the morning, or could be anyone else, or Noel can always check the inbox, we call it, or triage. We haven't sort of gotten that far at that point yet. And then check it and verify, so it might take 5-10 minutes, go bang, bang, bang. This goes to water meters, go to back in the office. I upload the data to a GIS system, save and move on. So that's the idea. We don't want to be bogged down in 24-hour right to disconnect.
I totally agree.
You might have to have that in
your
guidelines.
Yes.
That's been
thought
about. Any further comments?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's good to see this progressing. It's been bubbling along for quite a while now, but it's good. How long do you think the trial will take before we sort of roll it out everywhere?
We're aiming to assess the outcome, which is being assessed now. So outcomes, as I said, are we capturing the GPS locations? Are we putting it into a format that our date and time is there? Have we got that information now sitting in that corner. The next generation, we've got three projects that we've identified as priorities when we engaged with charters to provide these. Now that we've rolled out this first one and we've been able to assess that, now I'm happy to move forward. The next one will be meter changes. Because we've had that delay, we've got a form, an A4 form, and on that A4 form you may have, I don't know, 6 or 7 metres or 8 metres. And the boys will fill that form up before they send it up to the office. So now we'll, because of that delay getting it to the office, then the girls have got to take that form and then transfer it into their system. This is where we're looking at getting that information straight away. It's in there for the girls to utilise or report through within a week. That can be provided. The next one after that, then what were we looking at after the third one?
The breaks, correct.
So now we roll into our levels of service, having identified those two as areas that are there. If we have a break at any time, within working hours or outside of working hours, can go and take a photo. We know the location now of where that break was. That photo will identify the position. We then do our occupational health and safety, which will be a lot bigger than a paid fire. You'll have a working party that needs to come around and have a look. But if it's just an assessment to say, yes, I've been outside, I've looked at it, it's after hours, we've looked on the telemetry, we can see that, look, we're okay, come and we'll create a workforce to come there in the morning, and then they can take a photo and roll through, so we can have an assessment form and then a follow-up on it. And it's the third one that really feeds into this levels of service, David. So having those other two are really just, as I said, it's the outcome that we're looking at. Now we can actually put it in to do the things of what that levels of service is specifically for. So going to your time frame.
We're getting to it.
We are looking at June at the end of this financial year to have those three completed.
As trials?
As we're trialling it through, the beta form is all about getting feedback from Canoundra.
Yep.
Once we get that feedback back from Canoundra on how that's working, we will have the Canoundra boys going around and rolling that out to all of our operators.
Yeah.
So now that's...
So that's the meter form and the meter replacement and the brakes.
Correct. But we will, as we do the beta form on each one, and again, it's an assessment, but it could be, oh, we really need to do that step before we do this step, or, look, when we're out on the field, we actually do this, so let's put that in. So we've got consistency across all three depots that the work flow is exactly the same.
Mm.
So it's consistent, and that's important that for scene management is we have the consistency. So if I take a person from one depot and they may need to assist in another depot's area, we're consistent with the work programming and flows and just what we do and which way we do it. So that's where this will be good. So our aim is to have each beta one completed within a month,
mm-hmm,
and assessed, and then be rolled out the following month, and while they are assessing the next beta one that's been generated. So within 6 months, by the end of the financial year, we are hoping to have at least two of those beta soft forms in play, and the third one should really just roll out. So I'm confident that we will get the third one in that time frame as well, but if not, it will be very close to it.
Okay, one other question for Peter. We're using Chartist to do the capability review. We're using it to help with the soft forms and so on. On the budget, you say it's nil because we're using our existing arrangement. Does that mean we're not paying anything for all of this?
Noel's been organising that, but I've just advised us that there will be an additional, I think, licence fee, I think, of $8,000, which will commence next year for it. So we'll be taking into account when we get the 24-25 budget, so there will be a fee.
The work they're doing now is just preliminary to setting something up which they'll get a license fee for.
Yes, that's how it's going to work.
The workload that Chalmers is undertaking for us now is covered in our existing support arrangements.
Good.
And they are happy to continue to do that, noting that there has been lots of inquiries from other councils of how they can also tap in, because Chalmers looks after interim apps which are used in various councils.
Yeah.
So Goulburn Fields is a perfect
example. Yeah, right.
They're very keen to assess what we're doing and roll it out. So we're the leaders in getting this moving forward.
That's good.
I can say.
Yeah.
Councillor Cook?
Yeah, the only thing I can see is the human element in this is taking the photo at the beginning.
Yes, sir.
That's probably the only thing before.
Look,
is getting them to do that.
Through the chair. Councillor Cook, perfect example. It's like when we invoked in putting seatbelts on. And I remember jumping in a car and not having my seatbelt on. It's just that habit of doing it. Now I jump in a car, I put my seatbelt on.
Yeah.
And if we can instill that into every one of our... And it's not just the network operators. Like I say, we're looking at these soft forms to be rolled out for our water quality as well, looking after the dams, undertaking works that are necessary there. These things can be rolled out, but the consistency of what we are doing will be better consistent than what areas are doing. And it'll create, for me, it'll create really good discussions about, well, why are you doing it different in your way, and why aren't you doing it this way, or what are the benefits? So out of this soft forms, and especially with the beat, we've got to start with one, let them then roll out, and then we'll get that feedback as a finish. But we'll be able to challenge everybody then. But why are you doing it differently there? Let's, yeah, you are going to do it. That's not the point. So there's good benefits, I believe.
It's a bit like electronic sign-ons for wages.
Yes.
You get to sign on, they do it once and they don't get paid, and then they go,
that's
like,
right,
oh,
yeah.
That.
I mean, I'm sure the guys out in the field are just going to go, this is going to be of help to me in the future anyway. You know, it's basically a security thing as much as anything else. I'd like to move on.
Excuse me,
Councillor Nash.
I think that's all right, President Chair?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that this sounds very exciting to me, and I think this new technology, wonderful, and go for it, boys.
Go for it, boys. We are.
We got a minute there? Go for it, boys.
Some things where technology is great.
Yes, yeah, there's something. I'd like to move on, but I've now just thought of another question. I apologise. Have you thought about potentially incorporating in photographs from our consumers, our customers, who might be taking a photograph of a water main that's burst, and you get your damage done at certain points? Would you be accepting those sorts of that sort of data into the system in any way?
No, no, it's not. If I can just speak out of school, the idea of us to take that GPS location gives us assurance that where they're standing at that particular time and place is the information that is critical for us.
Yep.
To incorporate a photograph from a consumer or a passerby, certainly will encourage that, because that would also add benefit into our report. This is where it was and when it was taken, but we haven't got that digital signature on there to give us our time and date and our GPS location. So that's the critical part for us.
Yep.
We have attended, are you sure? Well, there is the GPS location, there it is, there's the time and there's the day. On the phone, that's when I receive the call from that party. So,
yeah. One more thing. I was actually saying, well, on that, I think it was Andrew, was he at the water conference with us?
Andrew Pulley.
Yeah. He was telling us about an app they use, and it could be your council to snap, share something, which he's encouraging them. Yeah, so they're
already
on
the
app.
It's more stuff,
because
it is.
Yeah.
I think we might move on. Look, thank you. Thank you so much, everyone. That's fantastic. I think we're all very pleased that this is underway. So, look, I think I'll ask for a motion for us to note the levels of service update report. Anyone good? Councillor Nash. Thank you.
Yeah.
Seconded by Councillor Cook. All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move on. So we're up to 12.5. Council Resolutions Update Report. The recommendation is that Council note the Council Resolutions Update Report to December 2023. Could I ask Gavin to talk to that?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair. This is the Resolutions Update Report that we report every council meeting. With the first one there, we've just spoken about the levels of service report in the update report. The Blood Bill Water Security Project update, we're having a workshop, internal workshop, after this meeting to go through the strategic objectives of the Bulabula Water Security Project, as well as the MOU, and also talking about funding considerations for that project moving forward. And the last one there, the deed with the neighbouring property owner at Lake Rollins. Noel and I have got a meeting with the new property owner tomorrow, actually out on site, because we haven't received that new deed for accessing water at Lake Rollins for stock purposes only. So we're having a meeting tomorrow, I think it's at 2:30, Noel out on site with the new property owner, so we'll get that moving.
Okay.
Any
questions?
Any questions?
Any comments, questions for anyone? We would like to put that recommendation in that report. Councillor Ewan, Councillor Best, and I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. 12.6, Financial Matters Investment Report. The recommendation there is that the information in relation to Council's cash investments as at 31st of January 2024 be noted. Peter, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. just with the investment report, a couple of things are sort of happening at the economic level. The CPI is sort of coming down, so initially when the CPI figures come in much lower for the December quarter, the market sort of reacted and started to discount some of their term deposit rates in anticipation of a reduction in the cash rate. And then the governor of the Reserve Bank came out and made a statement to say, well, she's certainly not in a position where she's looking at cuts at this time. She could actually, if the circumstances or the data indicate, she may even raise the rate. So what happened was we got a sort of for a few weeks there we had lower rates, and then the rates sort of stabilised the rate. So basically there's an expectation now that the current cash rate will probably stay in place for a considerable period of time, unless the economy slows much quicker than what people are expecting. There was some weaker unemployment figures that come in the other day, so it indicates that the economy is slowing down, so there may be a little bit of pressure on to reduce the rates maybe later in the year. The obvious thing that's stimulating the economy though, Mr. Chairman, is, in two words, Taylor Swift. basically, that's going to add about $401 million to the economic activity, so they're saying that could stimulate the economy and sort of keep the rates high for a little bit longer. But I know she's a very influential young woman, but I don't think she has a great deal of input into the cash rate that the Reserve Bank is going to. So basically, we're looking good to make our budget for the year.
Yep.
And we expect rates to sort of stabilise around these current levels. For a 12-month deposit, we can get around 5%. It's not a bad return to get in the current climate, and we can still, there's still opportunities out there for us to get that, so things are going reasonably well.
That's good. Thank you so much, Peter. Any comments or questions for Peter?
I think we need to watch and get with the Swiftie comment. It's the grocery costs inflation. What's now
going to be
talked about a lot?
Well, the chair of Woolworths, or GM of Woolworths, has just retired, or about to retire.
Yeah.
just spectacular way.
Yes.
After the four corners report.
Yes, so that'll be interesting.
I, however, noticed that the replacement is exactly like the same with the Qantas problem, who they're replacing it with.
Let's talk about it later.
Okay, look, if there are no further questions or comments, thank you, Peter. Anyone like to put that, the recommendation there is information in relation to council cash investments be noted. Councillor Cook, anyone else who's seconding? No, Councillor Somervale, thank you, and I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Thank you. Item 12.7, quarterly budget review statement, 31st of December. The recommendation there is that the council adopt the budget review statement for the quarter ending 31st of December, and the variations therein be voted. Peter, can I ask you to talk to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Focus on any variations.
Yeah, there's in this budget review, there's a lot of significant variations to the income statement, so it's pretty much we've taken a few reductions in our income in the September quarter, so we feel that that is on track, although we have had a wetter summer, particularly in some areas of the network than what we expected, and it's been cooler, so although we had the March figures were reasonably promising, we're not expecting a huge read in summer for the summer period because we have had rain, particularly around the Blaine area, where we've had in excess of, I think someone said to me the other day, about 11 inches in this month. Mm. So it's an extraordinary amount of rainfall.
Yeah.
So that affects our sales and so on. On the expenditure side, we're pretty much tracking with our expenses. We did have a little bit of expense with the Jack's Creek. We did incur some, when the initial break occurred, we did incur some costs on that to try and put in a temporary fix for that. So that sort of increased our costs a little bit, our labour costs a little bit, but I think we should be able to cover that. So on the capital side, the big item there is the Jack's Creek repair. I'll put it in there, an amount of $450,000. It's been brought to my attention that now the leads bills come in, it looks like that'll be around $341 for lead, and there's about $8,000 of our costs. So if you're looking about $350 there, so I'll put that money back in the reserve at the March review. So the other thing is we took $80,000 off the Dillagon Bore switchboard renewal. Director of Operations and Technical Service like to do that and to put it onto the Bangor Bore booster pump, which allows us to put water back from Gillagong Bore into Canoundra if we have another emergency situation with a rise there. There's still enough money in the budget to complete the Gillagong switchboard. The director assures me of that. So we should be right there. So overall, the document, there's not a lot of variations. Hopefully we've taken most of the hit in September. The overall summation of the review is that it's unsatisfactory compared to our original budget. Our original budget had higher income. I think it's unlikely we'll realise that higher income, but we may be able to get to the amended budget levels, although I am concerned with some of the wet weather that's been around. But overall, we're not tracking too bad compared to the revised budget, so overall it's not too bad a result.
Thank you, Peter. I guess the your unsatisfactory rating really is just us second-guessing what the weather was going to be like. Mm. Every farmer in the district was similarly doing the same, thinking that we were going to go through an El Nino and therefore get hotter and drier and so it just didn't happen. So even though it sounds unsatisfactory, the reality is it was caused by weather. It's not because of any structural issues.
That's correct. Mm.
Mm. Any other questions or comments?
I spoke to Peter about this earlier. we keep having wet years, and we can't do anything about it. That is, we can't do anything about whether the year's going to be wet or not. All we can do is, as Peter has said in the QBRS, it's unsatisfactory, and that remedial action's necessary, and there's seven or eight categories of remedial action, and since the September QBRS, Peter's added two more, maximising revenue and deferring expenditure, which I suppose in a sense is pretty obvious, that you've got to either get more money in or spend less. At some stage we're going to have to drill down into what our headings with some actions about what we can do. Because you wonder how long, if we have another two wet years or three wet years, how long can we go on making million-dollar losses, operational losses?
Brilliant, Mr. Chair, and that, they are valid, valid concerns, and I know the Chair has said to me himself previously that, you know, we need to probably, with the forward projections, we need to try and factor in some climate change effects and so on. Very difficult to estimate, and how you do that in terms of the dollars is not easy. But certainly we're looking at, with our fees and charges, and Council's indicated to me that they want to look at increasing the fixed charge, the access charge, next year by more than the user charge. That's basically the feeling I got from Council from earlier meetings, and certainly we'll look at that. From that point of view, we've got to set the fees and charges such that we recover all their costs. We are looking at a 4.5% wage increase next year. That's in the award, so we've got to be able to cover that. The other factor that's difficult is the depreciation factor, which is always a difficult one, and that's because we've got to bring the Carcor Reservoir on board. I'm looking at that in conjunction with Ben to look at whether we can split up between some non-depreciable bulk earthworks type expenses compared to the actual structure itself, which would be depreciable. I've got to actually do a discussion paper for the auditors to consider whether they're on board with that approach, but we're trying to do everything we can to try and minimise that depreciation number, but certainly it's one that we constantly up against as we expand the network, and it's something that's probably going to continue.
Well, it's an issue for another day, but it's probably one of the most pressing aspects of CDW at the moment, that's a sort of a red light on the horizon a bit, maybe because of the horizon, and increasing access charges, which are a guaranteed source of income, is something which we, I particularly, have been banging on about for a long while, and that's something clearly we need to do. But having just been in our GP council through the special rate variation process, which, I mean, we don't have to go through that because our rates are not capped. Mm. But if your rates are capped, you've got to justify why you want to increase it more than the cap. And what you've got to do to satisfy our part is tell them what you're doing. And it wouldn't be satisfactory to our part to say we're going to increase revenue or we're going to reduce expenses. They say, what are you going to do to increase revenue? Or we're not going to allow LAE to increase rates. So I think, although we're not subject to special rate variations and the whole process that entails, it is a good process to focus the minds of councillors on what you can really do. And whilst we don't have to convince IPA, we've got to convince ourselves. So I would suggest that when we start thinking about next year's budget, we do have a look at the way IPA approaches approving increases, and we sort of apply some of that discipline to ourselves, because it is a looming issue. We could well get another three wet years, or more. Who knows? And we haven't done our climate change risk analysis at this stage yet. That's going to throw a lot more light on it, and that's a really important thing that we do that. But I think it's one of the most pressing critical issues, the strategic issues that CDW faces just at the moment. So whilst seeing what you've recommended in the way of remedial action is good, we need very quickly to drill down below the headings. Okay, that's all.
I'll take it on board, Mr. Chair.
Councillor Cook?
Just in response to Councillor Sundowes, there is a review for IPART about financial sustainability and the way councils are looking at that. I don't know if it's for county councils as well as GP councils, but the terms of reference are being written at the moment, so it might be worth CTW having a look at that.
Yes, IPART has asked councils, I imagine GP councils, as well as county councils, and certainly outside of government, to comment on the terms of reference. Yes. We considered it a Blaney Council meeting as to whether we comment on the terms of reference recently.
Yeah.
It's only the terms of reference. they'll get into it, and then they'll issue a draft report and so on. That's when it becomes a bit more
important. Yeah, but you want to get into the terms of reference so you can get your questions answered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. I think that is more towards GP councils, though, particularly in terms of the rate system, and they've made changes to some of the rate bidding methodology and so forth. I think that's part of what they're looking at, and of course GP councils have got the advantage of they get financial assistance grants as well, which we don't receive, and that is guaranteed income. So it's a bit of a different set of circumstances. It's very difficult with the climatic factor or the seasonal factor to actually insulate yourself from that impact. Mm. And you don't want to get to the stage where your fixed charge is too large, where you have a situation where you have to go on to quite severe water restrictions, and you're providing consumers with very little by way of water due to restrictions or your demand management, but you've still got high bills.
Yeah.
Because people, they're probably not going to think that that's really fair and equitable. So you've got to consider that as well. And the other issue you've got
better
to consider...
Better getting some water than none.
Yes, correct. Mm. And the other thing is, one of the things that we've got to look at is we've got to make sure we're still affordable as well. I know that's it's very difficult to say what's affordable, but I suppose you look at the charges of your peers, of your peer water utilities and so forth, and see how you compare in your general purpose councils or your, and what they charge and so on. So you'd have to look at that comparison, which we did last year. And we'll do it again this year. We'll look at what others are proposing to do.
Yeah, I think the secret to that really is the lobbying that's going on at the moment to have funding for local water utilities based on community service obligations, not, you know, hit or miss grants for particular projects.
It's so fundamental to life is to have water, and so it should be just part of our community service obligation.
I agree.
That's another debate to have, Mr. Chairman. That's I totally agree.
And the other thing, through Mr. Chair, is that pensioner rebates, they haven't been touched for a lot of years now. It's remained at just over $21 a quarter for
$87.50 a year.
Since when, Peter? Since
1996, I understand.
Time that hasn't been looked at or increased for those people who can't.
Well, certainly, Dominic, you mentioned the climate change issue, and certainly it's one of the things that I'd like to be looking at in a bit more detail. We're going to be talking about the climate change adaptation plan, and this would be a component of that. Would be looking at how sensitive we are financially to changes in the weather. We obviously are. It is possible. I think, as you were speaking, I was thinking of ways in which you can determine the sensitivity and which components, which things we need to know, which things we need to what sort of data that we need to look at and determine what that sensitivity is. Once we've got that idea in our heads, we can then look at what the models are suggesting for the future, what changes might occur, and that'll give us a little bit more certainty about what wiggle room we have, and whether or not we need to make structural changes. Mm. I mean, there are going to be structural changes, even literally physically ones, if we can get things like that pipeline through to Mylong organised.
Yeah.
That opens up the prospect of more partnerships, spreading the word, you know, the old Hugo carpet tiles sort of idea, you know, spreading the word. And that volatility that we have, that sensitivity that we have to the weather can change as a result of just those sort of structural changes. So they're the sort of things that we could be looking at.
And the new pressures come.
And yes, there's that other pressure. There is other pressures.
More customers.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes.
Yes, not.
Yeah, through the chair.
In speaking of the budget for that, the question that always runs my mind is, we've now been in deficit for, what, three annual periods? Is it? Or four,
yes.
Maybe we're coming up to...
Probably four of the last five, okay. Maybe.
Is it better for us to remove our expenditure to our minimum to enable us to post a profit in the following year so we don't have a 6 or 7 year period of losses? But when does the reset start? Like I'm not suggesting that we delay lots of capital works that are critical for our system, but you've only got your income and expenditure, so the major part of our expenditure being capital works, to be able to delay those capital works to provide us with a profit in one operating year, is that seen as a better option for C2W seen by other sources to say we've got a profit, but then we go back into further deficit, or is it better to just roll it along using the same language as other councils would be, that the reason why we're operating in losses is because of the external sources?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I mean, the reason why we are is we can set our charges, but we don't really know what the demand water volume is going to be as to how what our revenues is. So the difficulty is on that revenue side. The potential problem I see it is if we continue with the deficit situation, that means we've got less money to put in your reserve for future renewal. But it also could possibly raise an issue for us when we need to go and borrow from someone. They're going to say, well, let's see your financial results for the last 5 years, and if you've got 4 out of 5 years of operating deficits before capital, potentially it could jeopardise your capacity to borrow. They think that, you know, that's just too hard.
Higher
risk, because you're not really, when you go out to borrow, you'd like to be making an operating profit before capital. And certainly, if we go back to 2002, when we last borrowed money, it was a 20-year term, we were, at that stage, we were actually in a position where we were making surpluses. So it's a difficult fundamental issue, and it's not easily resolved, but I think by discussing it and sitting down and sort of looking and working through strategies, I think we can work with it and obviously resolve it. The greatest thing is if we did make a surplus, but there's no point in just making a surplus for sake for 1 year, knowing full well that, you know, in future years you're going to do it, because basically at the moment with the long-term financial plan, I model on us basically making a surplus over the life of the plan. And that's the way I do it. Some councils actually put the deficits in there, and obviously if a council, if we take Blaney as an example, I haven't seen their long-term financial plan, but obviously prior to the rate variation, they were showing a series of deficits in the projection, and obviously the rate variation is to fix that deficit going forward. And it may take a few years till you actually get to the point where you're then making a surplus from then on, even with the variation. But it's more sort of difficult for us because we've got ongoing sort of capital needs, and with our network, it doesn't matter if we provide, you know, 100,000 kilolitres or 1 kilolitre, we're still going to maintain a network in an operating condition. So there's no simple answer to it, but we're aware of the issue, and we're just trying to look how we can sort of best, certainly for the next long-term financial plan, how to model that going forward. I've always been a person that I don't like to model deficits because the obvious question is, well, why are you doing that?
But you've got to be realistic.
Of course.
Yeah.
I agree.
Just to fill you in on the Blaney special rate variation, we did a 10-year financial projection and we got it audited by, technically audited, compiled and reviewed by Morrison Lowe. And the over the next 10 years, the average deficit per year was about 1.8, 1.9 million. So what we're seeking is a rate variation, a permanent rate variation of 10%, 10%, 10% over the next 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, we get to a break-even position. And that's then increased our base by 30%, which would otherwise have been 15%, but it's 30%. And that gets us into a break-even position going forward.
Going forward from that point onwards. Yeah. All things being equal.
So the parallel for CTW would be a couple of years of quite substantial increases to get us to a position where we're breaking even. But it's not really comparable because of the volatility of our income, I understand that, but just the principle is to get our revenue base reset to a sustainable position, and then you just continue on.
To make it ultimately more resilient as time goes on. Councillor Nash?
I'm going to pass that on. No, I'm right.
You're right.
I wouldn't like to put up capital works or anything like that myself. Yeah.
Particularly the ones that are critical for the future. Yeah.
Can I just make it just one further point, please, Mr. Chair? The other option, and I know that senior management has spoken about, is we always base on a 50-50 basis for grant funding. You know, is there a drive that can be provided by all councils to put more pressure on the state government and now the federal government? Now they've put their hands up to try and put some grant funding in to bring that contribution to, I know we've spoken about 25-75, so there's a 75% contribution from state and federal. And I think that's probably a good avenue for councillors to take in promoting and pushing through to try and get that additional revenue source rather than the whole 50-50 model. So that would assist us, of course, in being able to continue on with our capital works program.
No, I mean, that 50-50 is really only depends on the grant. Depends on the, you know, the source of the money and what the rules are around that money. In some instances, you know, some of the grants, for example, for a lot of flood recovery that's occurred in Cavon, there's no 50-50 involved at all. It's just, you know, you're after that amount of money and you hopefully get it a lot.
Mr. Chairman, what we're basing the 50-50 on is the current safe and secure water guidelines.
Yeah.
That's how we come up with the 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah. So it depends on the grant. You know,
if we were smaller, we'd get 75%. If we were bigger, we'd get 25%. But we are in that level where you get 50%.
Yes. Yeah. And we're in a similar position to general purpose councils in rural areas where we are so dependent upon state and federal government funding, grant funding, for pretty well any capital works that we do.
Yeah.
Whereas if we're in the city, whole different ballgame. Now, I was talking to a general manager from a city council who said, oh, we've got plenty of money, heaps of money, and we don't need to even bother going for grants, which is unheard of out here.
Yeah.
Because we've got so many people living in our area that our rate base is huge. So we don't go for grants.
Yeah. And through you, Mr. Chair, two meetings I've been at recently, or policy forums, two ministers have got up and basically said there's the $500 million that goes alongside the HAF, which is the housing fund, and both of them specifically said for water infrastructure.
Yeah.
$500 million that they're throwing away. Well, not they're throwing away, but they're putting on the table to get the infrastructure, because they know they need the infrastructure before they get the housing. So, and two of them, completely different parties, completely different events, saying quite openly, we want it to go to water.
Yep, yep. Yeah. Keeping our eyes on that. Definitely.
I have been.
Oh, yes.
And I text Gavin.
We are aware of that. Obviously, we're not working with our three, Mr. Chair. And there's going to be your ASO, Councillor.
Councillor Cook. But obviously we've got to work in with our constituent councils with development as well. There's no point us going and putting all over the infrastructure and there's no development going there. But they do say build it and they will come. Yes. But and then once again we do have that depreciation issue, adding to that depreciation issue if we haven't got those consumers online straight away. So that's the challenge we have. But
and the time lag.
Yeah. But we've got to obviously look at all opportunities.
Well, thanks everyone for that discussion. That was excellent. Thank you, Peter, for your restatement. So I'll put the recommendation that adopt the budget review statement for the quarter ending 31st of December 2023 and the variations therein be made. Councillor Cook has put that motion. Seconder?
I'll second it.
Councillor Nash? I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move. Thank you, Peter. We will move on to. Everyone is up to 12.8, the report from the Audit Risk and Improvement Committee. Recommendation there is that Council receive and note the ARIC minutes of the meeting on 22nd of November 2023. And the Council note the regulations to implement the new internal audit and risk management guidelines have commenced and are due for implementation by 1st of July. Peter, would you like to talk to that?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, we've got our minutes there from the November meeting. We've recently held another meeting here. We just haven't got the minutes formalised at the moment. So basically the November meeting we finalised the financial statements and all the necessary reports and so forth for the 30th of June financials. We had some draft policies there which have come to council, contractor management, protected information disclosures and social media. The other issue, this is a contentious issue, and is the issue of superannuation. It's going to finally be resolved. The new regulations have come out, but they haven't actually they didn't actually regulate for superannuation. They mentioned superannuation in the guidelines, which under Section 23A, you've got to give take on board those comments. There's a number of councils who feel that superannuation may not apply. So basically, local government New South Wales, after a lot of councils have raised this as an industry issue, have gone out and approached Genesis Accounting, which is a well-known provider of tax information to local government in New South Wales, and they're going to get a class ruling on behalf of the sector. Genesis are basically now writing to all the participating councils to see if you want to make a contribution. Contribution's $500 for a small council and $1,000 for a large council. CTW has agreed to contribute $500 to participate in that particular ruling. Now, it's quite possible that the ultimate decision may be that superannuation payments are required to be paid to independent members of ARIC. If that's the case, then the issue is when do they start or when do they become applicable? And the ruling will certainly address that issue as well. So hopefully we'll have that issue resolved hopefully the ATO, I'm not sure how quickly they respond, but hopefully certainly within 6 months.
That would not be a huge financial hit, though, really, would it?
No, it'd be 11% of the GST exclusive value of the fees, so it wouldn't be significant in our case. It wouldn't be a huge amount of money, no. For some of the bigger councils that pay higher fees for their members and have got more members, then it would become a bit of a significant issue for them. Mm-hmm. A number of councils are already paying it. They've said it's basically it's in the guidelines, so you know we must have to pay it. They didn't seek any advice or any guidance on it. Basically, CTW and Blaney Council and Upper Macquarie County Council, we've sort of discussed it. We've taken a view. We'll wait till we get the definitive ruling, and then we'll move forward from there based on what that ruling indicates. And I think that's probably a prudent way to do it. I really don't know which way it's going to go. How the ATO is going to actually view it, so we'll see how ultimately it's decided. Once we get a class ruling, the issue's finalised, it's done, dusted, everyone knows exactly what's happening. so we can move forward on it.
So, if I may, Mr. Chair, do you think the fact that we're not paying superannuation, unless the ruling comes out and saying you have to, for the moment, will negatively impact our ability to recruit an additional member for the ARIC from the 1st of July?
Very difficult to assess that. People have got to be obviously qualified. There's qualification requirements to get those roles. I don't personally think...
And my point is, there's not many suitably qualified people around the Central
Correct.
West.
Correct.
Every council is going to have to appoint an additional member. Mm. The handful of eligible new members are going to say, oh, I'll have that one on that one. And I'll look at our little group and I'll say, oh, they're nitpicking about superannuation. I'm going to go to Cowra or somewhere that pays superannuation. It's only a small amount, but it's a sort of symbolic thing.
I'm always of the view, Mr. Chairman, that we go for the prudent course of action. The prudent course of action is to get the advice on the matter and get the experts to argue the matter and put the matter in the ATO to make a ruling on it. The ATO certainly hasn't dealt with it previously. They did give some sort of ruling to the State Treasury, but that was in respect of state state government department committees and so on. But it covers where you make any payment to any committee member. I'm not aware of a lot of councils that pay other committee members for other functions that could apply to. So whether it becomes a deal breaker in terms of whether someone's selected, I don't know. It depends what they're looking. If they've got their heart in it and they wish to provide that service to the community, I don't think the superannuation would be a deal breaker, but that's a matter for individuals to assess. But I do actually just caution that ultimately the decision could come that we do have to make it and we may have to back pay it for a period, and that's something we will do if we have to do it. A number of councils have actually just elected to pay it to just say no, it's just not sufficiently significant to worry about.
Small amount.
Councillor Nash, did you want to say something?
No, I understand that this has been a bit of a problem with our ARIC meetings. It's a bit of a problem, but I'll just call Peter whatever he thinks, really. I'm quite happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the other thing we finally got the regulation through. New guidelines, they're required to be complied with at 1st July 24. A few features of that, and we started to work on a transition plan with the other councils involved with us, the three councils, is revised committee structure. You're required to add another independent member, as Councillor Somervale's indicated. We've got to attract another independent member. You've got to have a minimum of three independent members. Currently up from the under the old system, you could have two, but now you've got to have three. The council member will cease to be a voting member. Under the new guidelines, council members of the committee can be there as non-voting members, but they can't be there as voting members. That's one of the things that was heavily debated with the guidelines, and the OLGs basically said that, no, we don't want elected members to be voting members in the ARIC. That's the path they've chosen to go down. They want to try, and I think their argument is to try and keep the elected body and the ARIC committee independent, or keep the ARIC committee independent of the elected body. But the counter argument is that it provides that link between the elected body and the ARIC committee by having someone there that can vote. So there's arguments either way for that. The other issue is the appointment of interim water coordinator. Most likely that would be a staff member. That would probably be, in the case of CTO, it would probably be myself who would do that. So I'll liaise with the audit committee about the program of works, and we'll develop a program for the next 3 to 5 years, and we'll do that over the course of the next few months. And we've got to do a new charter or a new terms of reference, and there's a model of terms of reference that's on the OLG website, and we'll basically adopt that and change it to suit our circumstances. And there's got to be an internal audit charter developed as well of how internal audit's going to work and how it's going to function. CTW, to my knowledge, has never actually had an internal audit charter. It's had a committee charter, but hasn't had an internal audit charter as such. So we'll be using the OLG model template to do that, and we're looking to bring those things back to council probably in June for ratification by council, so they're in place by the 1st of July. And we hopefully want to go out and in conjunction with the other councils and get another new member of the committee, and we'll probably start to do that around April or May. That's what.
That was a question I was going to ask. You say here that the plan will be up under the April meeting, which I think is the 24th, will be June 4th. One of the things that we'll talk about then is adding an additional independent member. I know that the Planning Council, we've already resolved to commence the process.
Yes.
I just wonder whether if we don't resolve that till the 24th of April, whether we're going to be too late to get someone in place in time. Is there any reason why we can't resolve now to commence the process? Could we never going to do it?
We could do that. We've indicated to Blaney verbally that we will participate in a joint expression of interest to seek another member. We've basically agreed that. I wasn't aware that Blaney Council had actually adopted a resolution to that effect. I'm not sure whether you'd need a resolution to that effect. Because it's a regulatory requirement. So you've got to get one anyway. I mean, there's no harm having the resolution by any means. You can have it, but whether you're required to have it, I'm not really sure. But it's our intention to go out there and participate, and we'll be working with Blaney Council on that expression of interest at this stage.
Presumably we would have to resolve what that committee should consist of, who should be on the committee. I know the guidelines suggest that there has to be voting and non-voting, changes to the voting and non-voting members. But I would argue very strongly that we should have a councillor or councillors sit on the committee, even if they're non-voting. To allow that, some sort of communication flow at an earlier time than the time when these minutes ultimately get to council, because this is a meeting from 22nd of November last year, and it's all about the looking at the books from much earlier. So we're now into late February, and we're only getting a look at that. So to have those people sitting on that committee at the time, if they flag anything that needs to be talked about amongst the other councillors, it can happen way back then. And we can receive the final, formal reporting now. Yeah. So I would argue that we would have to resolve what that committee should look like, even if there are restrictions on voting for specific members of that committee. Is that not correct?
Well, for you, Mr. Chairman, basically we've got to do a new terms of reference. We could look to get that terms of reference to the April meeting. And that would outline all those disputed requirements.
Yep.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Previously, obviously, we've reported back to council or the makeup of the committee and who was going to be the council representative, and now it's going to be a non-voting member.
Yep.
I assume that process
will continue. Yes, and issues like should there be a councillor representative on the selection panel for the independent member? I think last time we appointed someone new, we didn't have a councillor on that panel.
That's more than the same, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and which I said I don't think is correct, because after all, at the end of the day, the Audit Committee is an independent committee reporting to the Council. Having some sort of supervisory role over what goes on in the finances of the Council. And so it seems to me that the Council itself should have some say in who's on the independent committee, not just the staff, who at the end of the day are the ones who are being looked at by the Audit Committee.
Yes.
So it didn't happen last time. I didn't know till after the event. I made the point in Blaney, not here, I can't remember, that really the selection panel should include a councillor.
Well, it's something I can certainly take up. Blaney, who certainly they coordinate that function, but, but no, last time there was not a councillor.
No, well, no one went in Blaney, when I make the point,
So we can certainly look at that. I suppose the issue we've got when we've got an independent member across three councils is, do you need
a council
representing from each council to do that, or that's the only difficulty I can see with that system.
But in principle, I think it's a...
Yeah, no, I understand the question, but it's just the practicality of, how that could be, done.
I mean, maybe that you do have to have three councillors, and, prima facie, that'd be the councillor member of the ARIC committee.
Yes.
That council's ARIC committee.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say three, Mr. Chair, at the moment, we could have Councillor Ewan on the panel, being up in Macquarie, CTW and Blaney.
Cover all bases,
Join the committee as a non-voting member.
Yeah.
That would certainly solve that practical issue.
Yeah, practical issue.
It's simple. You don't have to rotate the councillors around.
He's notably silent on this.
I think he hasn't got his...
selective hearing.
All right, look, are there any other questions or comments about that? I think, I guess we have little choice but to follow the rules as suggested to us. Are there any issues from that committee report, from the audit risk and improvement committee minutes? And are there any other issues there that anyone would like to raise?
No, I wasn't at that meeting, Councillor Nash was. I was at the subsequent meeting, which was held... some stage in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And no problems there, no concerns. Okay, look, if there are no more comments, who would like to move the recommendation, both recommendations?
I will.
Thank you, Councillor Nash. Seconder?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Councillor Somervale? All in favour?
Mm-hmm. Aye. Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. To item... I believe item 12.9, is it?
Yes.
Excuse me while I'm finding it. There we go. Okay, this is the policy review, project management policy and methodology, and gifts and benefits policy. And our recommendation is to note the report to endorse the draft project management policy, project management methodology, and gifts and benefits policy, and place on public display for a period of 28 days, and if no submissions are received during the public display period, the project management policy and project management methodology be adopted. Peter, would you like to speak to this?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a few policies that we've been working on that we needed to... project management policy and methodology were a couple of things that came out of the project internal audit. That we had done a couple of years ago. So we basically get that, and the idea was to get those two done because we're currently looking for a project manager, so it was an opportunity to get that in place and have it there so when the project manager lands on board, he's certainly got something to work with and got the guidelines there. These have been circulated internally. I think they're both draft number 5, so you can see that that's been a few drafts produced over the time. And look through, so they went up to the audit committee at the last meeting a couple of weeks ago, and basically the only issue that came out of that meeting was the question of what sort of threshold you actually have for the policy. There was some discussion that $1 million was maybe too high. We did go back to council, and the executive team looked at that, and if we look at our long-term financial plan, we do have quite a few projects coming up that are well in advance of that, particularly the trunk lanes, treatment plant, and basically the roads. So although in the past we haven't had a lot of projects to go $1 million, we thought in the future we will have quite a few. So we decided to have that $1 million as a runoff. We didn't want to make it too onerous so that, if you've got a project for $10,000, that you necessarily have to go through all the steps in the procedure. But you can modify, you can use that procedure as a guide to how you manage those projects. You may have a project that's under $1 million, as the Director of Operations and Technical Services pointed out to me. You may have one that's under $1 million, but it may be a project that's got special risks associated with that could impact council. So you would certainly, you know, you'd use the methodology for that, and that's how we basically looked at it. It's been rotated throughout council, those two policies, and the gifts and benefits as well. So, with just with respect to the gifts and benefits, basically an update to the policy that was last amended, I think, about 2016, and it basically just brings it in line with the current thresholds and the requirements of the Code of Conduct. So that's the reason it's basically been put through there, and it's a guideline for all council officials so they can actually they know how to deal with those particular circumstances. So basically we're looking for council to endorse those, and we'll put them on our website, and we'll see if there's any submissions to it, and we'll take it from there. But as I've said previously, if a councillor wishes to make a submission, more than happy to for a submission to be made, and we'd certainly bring that submission back to a subsequent meeting of council, and we could discuss it. So if someone feels that the policy does not achieve its objectives, any of those policies, and by all means, please bring it to our attention. We're quite happy to look at making changes to make them better.
Any comments, questions?
Yeah. This is, Peter's raised the issue already, the $1 million threshold, which was subject to quite a bit of debate at the audit committee a couple of weeks ago. And I expressed a view, and I'll do it again, that I think the $1 million is too high. We've now got soon to have a new project management officer on board to effectively be the one who will run with our project methodology and our project management policy. The number of projects we're likely to have over $1 million where it would be compulsory to apply our policies and so on are not all that great. This is a recommendation that came out of our project management internal audit review we had a year or two ago. They recommended we do this, and we have a policy. It seems to me a bit illusory to have a policy and a methodology where the number of times it has to be applied, I know it can be applied lower, but the number of times it has to be applied, which is what this council looks at, whether it's applied something lower, we've got no say in. It's a bit illusory to have a policy which is only going to apply occasionally. I'd be rather. And what was suggested, I think, by the chair of the audit committee was maybe a better trigger point to apply the policy would be the tender threshold, $250,000, which is the tender threshold under which the council has to approve appointing people to carry out work and so on. And so maybe $250,000, for want of a better figure, is. And to me, that's probably about right anyway. We don't have all that many over $250,000, but it would capture things like the Woodstock pump station, the bulk earthworks for the new reservoir, the Jack's Creek washaway, things like that, which are pretty substantial matters. There's not too many of them, but my view is that would be a better threshold. If we're just, as a council now, adopting these policies, we might as well adopt a policy which is likely to be applied so we can see how it goes. I mean, the policies themselves, the other thing I expressed at the audit committee was they're a bit over-engineered for a little organisation like ours. It's the world's best practice project management, and it could well be we get totally bogged down in applying with such a over-engineered policy. But that's what's been put up to us, and that's your decision. But from a council's point of view, I think it's just the $1 million threshold is a bit high.
Councillor Hall?
Through you, Mr. Chair, to the General Manager. What is the General Manager's delegation for upper limits or projects?
Mine's 250.
Yes,
yeah. And to go to 250, so you go to the investigator council. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah. And I take Councillor Summerville's point, and we did raise that was the rate at the ARIC meeting, recent ARIC meeting, and we did discuss, and it was raised by you, David, that we don't want to make it too onerous, and that's why when we went back and we discussed about what limit. And going back a step as well, I think in the recommendations from the project management review, they did recommend that we have a methodology in place, project management methodology in place, but they also did note, I think, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, that it doesn't usually, the $1 million isn't applied to water utilities. I think we're taking
that. That's the capital expenditure dollar.
Yeah, with the guideline. And, but we thought we'd take that on as a first
stab at it.
Yeah. That we have, yeah, because we haven't had one previously. So that was where the $1 million came from. Initially, it was at OLG guideline for GP councils, and we thought we'd take that on. But once again, it's up to council, and once again, we don't want to make it too onerous. Like, if we've got projects that are up to 250k or just over, Noel could probably mention some projects off the top of his head that would be straightforward trunk main renewals that don't need this amount of scrutiny. But there could be options in here where we say, like, that methodology or part of the methodology is applicable to this particular project, so we don't get bogged down in the requirement.
Councillor Beth?
My comment is pretty straightforward. Then if that's the case, we should be developing a policy that covers between 250,000 and a million, and it's less onerous and gives us a guide of best practice. We just do an extension of this policy that includes all project management through from 250 to being less onerous, but gives us just guidelines on best practice, and we follow that. Just straightforward.
I think the difficulty we're going to have is that we will have projects under $1 million, which will have, as Peter said, some risks associated with, we think, but we'll have to go through the full project methodology. I suppose it's just a case by case.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman, we did put a sentence in there, I think it's in both the policy and the methodology, where it says, projects not exceeding the threshold estimated cost may adopt a methodology depending upon the complexity and or risk of the project. Mm-hmm. So obviously if there's a project got special risks around it, we would adopt it. It just wouldn't be mandatory that it be applied in that case. So there's always the option there to apply it.
So I'm a bit discretionary.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is a solution. I mean, Gavin's pointed out that anything over $250,000 exceeds his delegation. It may, and therefore it's got to come to council for a tick. Maybe at that stage, one of the things council does when considering whether to approve the expenditure is decide whether to apply the policy.
Actually, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've been putting the report to council saying we have applied the, but we will be applying methodology for this project, or we have. And put it to council for that.
Then you decide on what the engineering circumstances are going to be.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's plenty hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, if we adopt something like that, you're going to need to change this document before sending it out, if we're making that suggestion, surely.
Maybe not, because it says we may apply under $1 million.
May adopt,
And what we're doing is the policy itself would be okay. It's just an internal decision of council that the may is will, if council, when approving a spend over 250, decides the policy will apply. So the policy itself probably is okay. It's the internal rules around the application of policy.
But that needs to be captured somewhere.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Exactly. It's either in this resolution or the resolution when we adopt it.
Which reminded me, go back to the original recommendation, and that is recommendation 3 there is, if no submissions are received, the project management policy and project management methodology be adopted. I think we I think we still need another step where we incorporate.
I think after the display period, it comes back to council.
It comes back to council. So not that. So that should be changed to not be adopted, but it should be brought back to council.
Brought back to council for approval.
Yeah.
For approval.
And through Mr. Chair, the resolution, Peter, should that include this and benefits policy as well? We've only got project management and project management methodology.
Yes, previous chairman, yes, it should.
We should include the gifts and benefits policy as well. It's just been left out of that resolution.
What was that second one?
Also include the dot point three, the recommendation three, to include gifts and benefits policy that's been inadvertently
left out.
So we don't really need that brought back to council.
No, but it could probably.
Otherwise, it's going to be a complicated resolution.
Well, that perhaps should be a recommendation number four. Separate them out.
Yeah.
And yes, that could be adopted.
Yeah.
Okay. So, using the same wording as immediately above in number three, no submissions are received during the public display period. The gifts and benefit policy be adopted.
Yeah.
That's item number four. Is that correct? And then item number three is that if no submissions are received during the public display period, the project management policy and project management methodology be brought back to council for approval, for discussion and approval. And I guess it's at that point that we would
pass the resolution.
Pass the resolution.
That this policy applies to any decision for expenditure of money over $250,000 if council so decides at the time, or something like that.
So we can have a submission, and we'll record that in the meantime and make sure we discuss that at the time and see what people say. Mm-hmm. It'll give us a month or two to have a think about it, about the practicalities how many projects would that mean, and how much more onerous or how much more money would be involved.
Through the chair, I was part of the discussion with the other committee as well, and I just pointed out the reason why we looked at that $1 million was if you look at our capital works expenditure that we've got in our financial plan, at least 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we're aware of the projects that are there. And the reason why I looked at the risk of putting in a risk component for anything that was below $1 million was that could be done for work that we've never done before. So, for instance, the bulk earthworks that we've done for the 12-metre reservoir, that would be below $1 million. But because we've never done that before, we need to
this
project management because that's the biggest bit of the chunk to ensure everything is done properly. Okay, but then on the same token, when we look at running our pipeline projects, our augmentation of say Trunkline C or Trunkline B, that's what we do every day of the year when we've done Trunkline K, and that'll be a couple of $1 million or so, but the sections that we may do in between may be up to $1 million if we get a bit of expense, and God forbid if we get on some extra funding through this water sales and that, and we can highlight, let's go and put in this project and get that pipeline through. If we're doing that work as a business as usual, the risk factor in us not providing the result of what we're after, which is what project management is all about, and you've got a project, you need to deliver it because of something, and that must do that at the end of the day.
Mm.
If we're doing pipeline projects, I don't see the risk factor in doing that. It's going to be, it will be onerous on us to have to
do all that background.
So that was the background behind why we looked at the high level threshold, but being able to apply it practically in. So I do like the amendments that you're putting forward because it's in line with where we are. And again, that can be covered off on the projects as we roll through.
But if we leave it at a million, it gives us a much better opportunity to get in and start that project initiation a lot quicker. If it's mandated, then we can come back and again, we'll look at the risk factor. Is it work that we continue to do? Is the risk high? Yes, it is. Never done before, that's the first one. Okay, so we'll go through that process. Right, so it's more of a background.
Thanks, John. I think this is a great discussion because what's being suggested is a level of flexibility and common sense, really. You know, it's because we don't really want to restrict ourselves. You know, you must do it like this beyond a certain point when, as you say, there's a lot of in-house technical skill. Why would we go beyond here when we've got the skills to carry through projects that we know everything about, you know, pipelines, if you know that implicitly. So, I think, if there's no further discussion, comment, questions, I think we'll go through and just make the recommendation. I'll make the recommendation. Move the amendments first. The amendments are for item 3. If no submissions are received during the public display period, the project management policy and project management methodology be brought back to council for discussion and approval. I'll do them both together if you like.
Yeah.
Number 4 is quite specifically about the gifts and benefits policy. So if no submissions are received during the public display period, the gifts and benefits policy and place the public display if no submissions are received during the public display period, the gifts and benefits policy be adopted. That's 3 and 4. I'll up those. Any seconders?
Yep.
Councillor Somerville, is a seconder. Yep. And all approved?
Aye. Yep. Aye.
Okay, thank you. So that's the amendments. Now the resolution is the recommendation here that Council 1 note the report, 2 endorse the draft project management policy, project management methodology and gifts and benefits policy and place on public display for a period of 28 days. And 3, if no submissions are received during the public display period, the project management policy and project management methodology be brought back to council for discussion and approval. And 4, item 4, if no submissions are received during the public display period, the gifts and benefits policy be adopted. And we'd like to put that motion. Councillor Somerville, seconder. Councillor Ewan, all in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. Thank you. That's good. Good discussion. So those policies can go out as they are, unabridged, and we can have further discussion at the next meeting about these potential amendments depending upon what the submissions are like. That's good. Excellent. Next item. Scrolling through, bear with me. Item 12.10, maintenance of council systems. The recommendation there is council note the information in the general report. Noel, would you like to speak to that report?
Sure. Pretty standard, except I'll just highlight section C, fluoride package unit at our carpool water treatment plant is out of action. We've had a gearbox failure, we've been following up, trying to obtain spares through the prime to our representatives for the purchase of fluoride. It is specialised, it's something we can't just go out to anyone with. We are working through those with Health Mail, of course, so they're aware of it. They're following us up as well in trying to find some timeframes for it. And again, we're waiting on Prominent to come back if they can source for bits and pieces. So noting that the chlorine and the fluoride plants, they were all part of the original carp or water treatment plant, not the new carp or water treatment plant that was built in 2002. So, okay.
So that one?
That's the old one.
That's the old one.
That's the old one. But, yeah, so it please don't think it's a 20-year plant. It's certainly not. It was prior to those. Whilst we've got a brand new plant here at Blaney Water Treatment Plant, which was operating perfectly, we got to find additional auxiliary equipment to try and get this thing up and running.
Time frame and costs?
Not off the shelf. We're hoping to get the correspondence that we've had with the supplier is they believe they have sourced something that would be equipment. Equipment for us. It's a month or so, maybe two. You know. However, please note that by not adding fluoride to our system doesn't just stop fluoride continuing to flow throughout to our consumers. There is a long delay in dropping down the fluoride component of the water that we're sourcing. Alright, so it could be months and months before we'd actually see zero fluoride. We're just not holding it to the level of one, which is what we aim to do under our guidelines.
Okay, so we can get back up to that level relatively quickly as the new equipment comes in. So the long-term impact or medium-term impact is relatively low.
It is. And again, we communicate with health, they're aware of it, they will do a call back to give, and we will give them an update to satisfy the requirements under health. Whether it goes out to any further, it's up to ourselves, I suppose, but at the moment, until I can get a definite answer that no, it's not available, and then we've got to really drive hard to get another plant similar to what we've got here. And we haven't looked at a plant to
upgrade it
out there because, again, we've got that dependence on where we're going to build plant water treatment plant. That's still being assessed. So if there is a move to go to relocate out of Carp, or if you like, knock down the old plant up then, well, of course, that then drives forward to get a new plant up and running as soon as possible.
But that modular, like, similar to here, you had it, would it then be coming back up for this one, or it's not?
They're a completely different system. So this is a saturated fluoride plant where that's a dry powder fluoride plant backing up there. If there is a negative result coming back, we'll certainly go on to health and try and undertake the same sort of procedure we had in obtaining funding for the design and installation of the new fluoride plant.
Okay.
I'm just noting in the report that it's out.
Indicative cost, rough cost of the group of the replacement?
Less than five.
Oh, okay, so it's simple. It's
very basic. The equipment that's there is a motor, a gearbox, and a bit of ducting and things like that. So,
okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Noel on that? If not, I'll put the recommendation that, ask for someone to put the recommendation to the council on information in the general report on the maintenance of council systems. Anyone like to prepare? Councillor Best, and seconded by Councillor Nash. And all in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. Move on to item 12.11, performance of council systems. Recommendation there is council note the information in the report. And Noel, would you like to speak to that? That looks pretty good that I've seen, except for the, the obvious.
So, Chair, it's pretty well standard practice. I will make note, however, Lake Rollins, we have had an increase in manganese, in silicon, Lake Rollins. We have been able to capture that increase before any dirty water complaint or any concerns about discoloration being sourced from blend water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been able to hop onto that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We've managed that in quite unique, where we've turned on our pumps at Plum Street to pressurise Blaney Township, and we're able to supply Blaney Township with water while we turn off Blaney water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was proved successful, which is a good insight into some resilience into our system. So that's our first option, turn it off, whacking some pumps, and we can do that off the telemetry now, start the pumps on telemetry, so we can maintain a level of water in our clear water tank just by pressurising from Plum Street, noting that Plum Street is supplied from carbon water treatment plant, it is not susceptible to the issue of
was the influx of manganese, was that associated with a particular rainfall or series of rainfall events? Do you know?
It caught us by surprise. We weren't expecting it. So the trees that we would normally be looking at was times of very little rain and then subsequent large rainfalls that are flushing through.
Yep.
And as we all know, that hasn't happened. We've had that continuous rainfall. So it caught us by a little bit of surprise to note the increase.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, we have opened the scale valve at Lake Rollins Dam to enable, just in case there was something that, whilst we were running our destratification pumps and turning that water and oxygenating the water, whether that was bringing something out, but it was like we've got plenty of water coming in, let's get it out and see what the effects are. So it's good to be able to trial these sorts of things as well,
mm-hmm.
to see what the effects. What we have noticed is the value that we were, value of manganese that we were receiving at Blaney Water Treatment Plant was differing from the amount of manganese that we were recording at Lake Rollins. And at the time, when we were getting the high values coming through, which initiated a trigger to do something, turn it off, whatever, it was pretty well. We went through a flushing program and we flushed the pipeline out, and now the values of manganese are stable at Lake Rollins, but now they're very low. They're lower than what the values at Lake Rollins are. So it's as though the manganese is sticking to the pipeline,
mm-hmm.
and it's just accumulating itself over time, and then all of a sudden
it's just a release of it. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hats off to my water quality manager for picking it up, and our water treatment plant operators to pick those up. We've had some good discussion about trigger points and how we can initiate the trigger points to see if there's a difference of what we're getting at Rollins to what we're getting at Blaney or what we're getting at Cardboard, and that's something that can generate through another soft form, different than what we talked about with Charters, but through ID, that look at if it's greater at Blaney Water Treatment Plant than what the values are at Lake Rollins Dam, initiate a trigger and then start instilling a program to flush
through
before we get to the point where it's going to break through.
So you've got the whole issue of the initial source of the manganese, which will be catchment related, through to storage of it within the storage, through to the transport and the collection of it along the pipeline, and then so once you've got your head around all of that, you can initiate triggers for the flushing, etc.
Right. So instead of just looking at the ball pump, the effectiveness may be not as good if we've got really wet weather or really dry weather at some periods of time. So, look, hats off to my water quality manager for initiating those sorts of discussions and being really proactive in leading things forward to take the onus off just somebody reading a value and not being triggered to move forward. One of the worst parts is I now have to put my hand up and apologise that a couple of my calculations I've highlighted at Lyndhurst don't seem to be adding up, and one at Manildra as well. So can I just say that the values that we use for the notes at the end of the table, so it's looking at not the individual values that are incorrect for those two towns, but it's looked at the overall values in the last so for instance, if you look at Lyndhurst, we've got zero for everything, and yet I've got 6.79% for check metering. My apologies, but I haven't just picked those up. And if you look at Manildra, the last one, the new meter replacement, we've had two there, which means we've had a, that's correct, 0.43. However, it's reflecting a 0.00 in the top section. So all the others are okay. So sorry, I've just picked that up now, so I'm going through. But it does not change the notes that add through.
Yeah, the summary notes at the end. Yeah. No, that's fine. That's good. Well, that's noted. Those minor corrections can be made to the document. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Noel. That's great. And so the recommendation is that we note the information in the report. And we'd like to move that. Anyone like to move that?
I'll move it.
Thank you, Councillor Nash. Seconded by Councillor Somervale. I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. That's carried. Thank you, everybody. And the next item is 12.12, water security drought impact update. And recommendation is the council note the information. And Noel, would you like to speak to this?
Through the chair, may I bring in that this is hopefully the last report you have on this subject.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, noting, of course, our central water grid pipeline, it's really out of our hands. So if there is something that is any updated information, I can report the updated information rather than just have a continuous, we're on hold. So if everyone is happy with that, I'd like to take this one off. So, however, it's nice to see Woodstock. So as I've said, as far as New South Wales grant funding is determined, we have reached our 100% completion milestone. There is a little bit of additional works, but again, we will be funding those ourselves, so it's not grant related. And the reason why I make that distinction is we need to do a final report to the grant funding authority to enable them to release the last 10% of the grant funding that they're withholding, awaiting a practical completion for both projects. So that practical completion has been now verified by a DEQ representative. That's been forwarded through to the grant funding personnel, and we've received yesterday a request, and they're happy to close out our project, and therefore they'll release the 10% funding that has been withheld. As I said, there's a bit of interconnection between Carrishire Council and C2W's telemetry system. So if I could just expand on that a little bit.
Sure.
What we've done is we've looked at little elements of our systems where CTW would like to know more about what is happening past our meter in certain areas. So, for instance, we supply a bulk water supply to Gooladong. So off our trunk main C, we take off, we have a meter that feeds through Gooladong Reservoir. That reservoir then feeds the township of Gooladong under Carrishire Council. So we've had times when we put a little point-to-point telemetry system on their reservoir because they've had issues with their, we're not filling, or there's a problem, there's some talking about water quality, so they're adding things in. So we thought, right, let's link up that information, bring it back to us so we can see it from our end. So we're sort of doing a bit of interlinking with that telemetry. So to do that, we would put a little point-to-point and bring that information back to our normal outstation, and then that would be combined and the information come back to the office. When we had the issues with Jack's Creek, there was Pierce's scheme where the reservoir at Pierce's, which we never really looked at and being part of, ran dry. And that was because we were providing water coming back up at a lower pressure at Rivers Road than would be normal, but we had enough pressure there to feed our Canandra reservoir, so we were looking at our own system. However, Pierce's scheme was not able to be used because the reservoir level had dropped down. So then we thought, do we need to put a little point-to-point system from Pierce's reservoir back into our system, and we can see that as well. Then we go into some Woodstock pump station, and then Woodstock pump station is we need to know how much water is being pumped out and when you're operating the pump, so can we get that back into ours, so vice versa, but we can put a little point-to-point system into theirs and then they can read ours. So when we looked at a bit of an overview, we thought, well, why don't we just put one unit at Cowra Shire's base station, so we can transfer information from anything in Cowra's telemetry system, and they can provide us those values and shoot it through to us, and then we can look at any part of our system and put it back. So instead of doing little point-to-point systems around, and the cost of that is just have one unit and being able to transfer whatever information is required that we deem is okay for us to relieve, and they deem okay. So this is where we haven't put the point-to-point system on for Woodstock. We'd rather put a bit of money in and provide just one unit at Cowra, and then we've got open slather on what the information we need, so we believe it's relevant.
And
so
what's their view on that?
I think they're quite happy with that.
Yeah.
Yes. So, for instance, at Frontmain H takeoff, they've got pH, turbidity, and chlorine levels. So we can capture that, bring that back into our system. It just enables us to amplify without cost. Mm. It's just one little small cost, rather than point systems. So that's what we're exploring. So that's why we haven't gone ahead. It just gives us a lot better information gathering points to share if it's been necessary by the appropriate councillor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Good.
All right, so 12-week reservoir, happy to say, finally.
Good.
It's all in operation. We've been operating it since the water tightness test, I think, at the end of November. We transferred the water across into there, did the water tightness test, that passed. We have had a bit of weepage, which is common. It's taking up. There's less and less weepage around those areas, so everything is working as what would be expected. We are currently running both 2.1 meg and our 12 meg in parallel. So because we've got the RLs of the base to be the same, the new reservoir is 10 metres high and the 2.1 meg is only 7 metres high, so there's about 3 metre difference. But we're just using the one source of instrumentation that's on the 2.1, the old, to reflect the value. So that's until we get that new instrumentation completed. Conduit's been run, cable has been pulled, but that's the interconnection between ourselves. That wasn't part of Leeds. that was part of our work to be done. So they're just a couple of little jobs that we need to tidy up. But as far as the grant funding, I'll just want to note that 100% completion as far as our grant funding, practical completion of Leeds work is complete, Woodstock's complete, but there may be a little bit of tidy up work whilst we finish. But pre-chlorination is another thing that we're putting in to the pipeline, so we've got the opportunity to put that in, and we're running that pipeline to pre-chlorinate, so instead of just looking at post-chlorination.
Thank you, Noel.
So hence why I'm saying project cost to complete, zero, for the Tormeg reservoir, and there's about 16k, and again, I'm just looking at telemetry and things like that, and I've just wiped it into that project, okay, tidy that up, it'll be expanded.
And it looks like we've got a bit of money to do some roadway landscaping as well.
Can I ask about that?
Certainly.
I can understand why, if we were still into grant funding, we wouldn't want to send any money back, and we would want to spend it all, including on landscaping and that sort of thing. Seems to me now we've exhausted the grant funding and we're into our own contribution, which we approved some time ago. There's 207,000 on the reservoir, and there's 86 left over on the pump station, which we were going to transfer into the reservoir, so that's 290 odd left over. Given the financial position we're in and the need to, as Peter said, look pretty closely at our expenditure, don't you think it would be prudent for the moment just to defer spending that $290,000 on roadway and landscaping and put it back into the infrastructure reserve just to see how things financially pan out in the next year or so? Given the landscaping and the roadway, I mean, it's not a public thing, it's all on internally on our own properties and so on. This does seem to me to be something, probably given the prudence we need, something that's not necessarily spent on that. As I said, it would be different if this were grant money, but as long as their own money. So, and maybe the concept of spending it on these sort of landscaping purposes arose before we knew we were going to be dipping so much of our own money on this. So, I don't know whether the chair would think that's something we should be thinking about.
Yeah, well, first I'll ask Noel. With the road base, is that obviously it's suitable at the moment to continue on with operations and with future weather events and whatnot. That'd be my concern, is this work need to be done straight away, as in first any safety concerns or operational issues that we may have?
So the reason why I've kept that in, and it's always been set aside, is because I really didn't know how it was going to come into play. Okay, we were following it through, we did all our checks, and we've been very, very vigilant in how much money is being spent and what was going to be left over at the end. The reason why, and that's the reason I put that money aside to use if needed, the safety concerns we've had is we had to expand out past a 4 metre roadway to a 5 metre roadway and more, which meant we've, instead of the slope of the earthworks coming down and meeting, we've actually had to chop down. So that's where I'm talking about the landscaping, is actually putting some concrete blocks all the way around the outside, so we're not getting the rocks part of that edge point where we've cut off, that rolls out, and then others have actually got some bit of slippage that you can see up there. So again, how much do I spend on that? Not sure. How much have I got in the budget? Let's work it with what I've got left out of the budget. So that's one of the things. As far as tying it in, and the landscaping side is, my consideration is this is going to have a grand opening. You know, we're going to have politicians, we're going to be there. it's something that, to me, is going to give now CTW, serve CTW for the next 100 years. So do we need to tidy up a little bit in an area where it's going to be open and the polys and photographs and things like that will be done? Or are we going to do it in a way where we think it would be best suited for us in the long term? So again, that's, I haven't committed any money to it. I've got the remaining funds out there, but there is things that we can do. And if council says, no, I'm only going to give you 60, and again, we'll go out and have a look. So, and no problems in councillors coming out and just letting me walk them through of why I see this area needs to be completed. But again, we'll tie in the amount of work that I need to do is if we relocate, say, Blaney Water Treatment Plant, and we're going to tie up and put it relocated out the Carpool Water Treatment Plant, the last thing I want to do is make this beautiful roadway access our clear water thing, and then dig it up and have it dug up by construction purposes for running trucks and things like that over. So it's sitting there. It's something that I believe that we should spend something on just to keep it, whether it's that amount or not. But it was something of value that now I can put in place to say to council, I recommend that we shouldn't be able to use all that. But I certainly haven't gone ahead and put in place the use of that funding. Mm.
Well, we just hire some asbestos to put out there when the police come. Look, I think I hear you, and I agree with David that whatever's left over should go back into the reserves as much as possible. My personal preference would be just to make good the site to the point where you feel secure and safe and comfortable, so that if there's any potential erosion issues, for example, that big wall that's there, big amphitheatre, and all of that just to be made good so that you're sort of safe, secure. It doesn't have to look perfect. I agree, it's not a public facility, it's a way out of the public eye, out of the public gaze. I think trying to do something for a bunch of politicians, I don't think anyone gives a toss really, because it may as well be a factory in a way, you know, it doesn't have to look brilliant. I think any building job involves an element of minor landscaping at least, just to make good the site. And I think, some of that money should be devoted to that. I'm not sure it's going to take $290,000. And so I suspect that there will be some remainder that should come back to reserve.
Hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, we're dipping into our infrastructure reserve for things like the Jacks Creek wash away. Who knows what's going to happen, what the next one's going to be. And, to have spent this money on more than we need to for safety purposes, looking back on it could be a bit of a waste of money, irresponsible waste of money. We just don't know. I would say not do it, let's just defer it for the moment. Or do what's minimum.
Or just use common sense, really, about finishing the job off, just making good, which may not cost much money, $50,000, $100,000 at most, just to make the site look okay and safe, and the roadway is usable, accessible, but not causing too much erosion, all those sort of things, and then the remainder go back into reserve. Councillor Cook?
I would just think that finishing the project would be a good idea, and not deferring it. I get the money situation, but will we ever go back and do that, or just finishing it now? And the second question I have is probably for you, to Peter. The capitalisation, you were talking before about depreciation on the project, and capitalisation, like if it's done at this time, it's part of the project, and would be in that project cost. If you do it separately, it would become an expense, which is in the year that it's done. So that's quite a big accounting question.
If it's to do with the actual, it's an interesting question. If you did it later, would you capitalise it? Because it's a permanent place in the site, you probably would. So it'd be part of the reservoir, but it'd be reservoir or other or whatever. I think from my point of view, I agree with everyone here, but basically, if the site's safe and that and you know, and all the relevant land issues with erosion and so forth and drainage and all that's taken care of, you know, I don't have a problem with putting that money back to the reserve.
Oh, Marlene, did you, Councillor Nash, were you wanting
to say? I'm waving my arms around, I think, but yeah, I understand where David's coming from for sure. But I'd like to finish it now, like, as you say, make it safe and make it look as good as you can, and whatever money's left over, put in reserves. I'm quite happy with that. But do it now.
Again, that was the approach why that money was pushed out to the site. It hadn't been put into any purchase order or anyway. Nothing has been. It's just what have we got left over, how can we make the best out of what we've got. Of course, I'll always look at cost savings.
Mm-hmm. So. As much as possible, I think. Yeah. So, do we need to make a resolution to that effect, or just use common sense?
I'll do the best I can and report back to council what it's doing.
So there's no commitment. We can get as much of that back into reserve as possible. That would be good. Don't we need to make a resolution on that, do we? I guess we could resolve to give you $100,000 or something to do that job, but
I think the directions from council are pretty clear that we need to spend as little as we need to make it safe and make it good, and endeavour to maximise the balance put back into the infrastructure reserve. That's sort of the direction.
And finish the project.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
get it done.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if there's no resolution required, we'll just the recommendation here is that council note the information. Thank you to Noel for that, and congratulations to everybody really for getting these projects to completion. I think we've had some congratulations beforehand as well, but you know it's great to see these projects put together. With support from council, support from previous chair, carry through to completion. I think it's excellent to see.
I'd just like to reiterate. I said this many times before, but really acknowledge Noel and his team with the work they've done. Also with Peter managing the project, managing the finances. These aren't small projects, and we all know we're a small organisation. So, in conjunction also, obviously, with Orange City Council and Kiara, but this is a fantastic win for CTW and the region. Mm. In we've got a 100-year asset there, and it's just fantastic work that Peter has been involved in has done. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Thank you. So, back of a white paper, too, by the way, that 5.5 million.
So, we should be thanking also, yes, the source of funds. Exactly. Indeed, yes. So, a formal thank you to our New South Wales State Government for providing the funds to do this project. And we will continue, I hope, to have very strong relations with both state and federal government for future funding of future projects, of which the augmentation of Lake Rollins is high on the agenda. Yes. So, look, would anyone like to put that? We note the information, Councillor Cook, seconded by Councillor Ewan. Thank you. I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Thank you. Moving on to 1:15. When's our 2:00?
2:00, we've got it scheduled for, but it's at any time. We just want to do it. So, finish the meeting.
Finish the meeting, have a bright bite to eat, and then.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end anyway. Okay, 12.13, which is the renewable energies project update. And recommendation there is that council note the update report for renewable energy projects Noel, would you like to just quick comment on it?
Yeah, look, again, this is just one that I'm just going to provide some graphs for. Mm-hmm. There's not much change now. The project's pretty well been completed. There's a little bit of tidy up work where I've kept about 16K in for doing some PLC programming that we've identified while we've been running their solar panels out at Kanamalai Pump Station. I'm highlighting the benefits that we've got, if you like, for both and the efforts that our Carpool Water Treatment Plant operators are applying. Can I also state that that lower part in the December of 23 is only using a 12 meg reservoir, because if I remind you of the old bell graph that we had, and there were certain times where we were exporting the power from our solar plant because we turned off our water treatment plant, so that excess power that we weren't using was just being exported out to the grid. Now with the larger 12 meg reservoir, we can run it during the day and get everything in it. So we're actually consuming all of that solar power, and that to me is why we're getting such a good result. And if you look at how the seasonal effects are, it's really terrific. The boys have done remarkable to keep those energy costs down and change the way that we normally do our operations. So hats off again to our water quality people in undertaking those. The Kanamalai pump station, you can see what happens when all of a sudden we have to run the pump station.
Yep.
And that's a direct result of Jack's Creek. That occurred just on November, was our first break, but we had to operate that pump station to keep the pressures down for the flow that was required to get out to Manildra and Grace Hill. So we had to suck the water using Kanamalai pump station. But again, we're maximising the use of our solar, but we have to put that back into operation and run that 24/7. So reflection on that is it is what it is, but we are now returning back down to where we were in that lower case.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, Noel. Any questions or comments? Anyone? Okay, so look, the motion is the council note the update report for renewable energy projects. Anyone like to? Okay, Councillor Cook.
Yeah.
Councillor Best, thank you. I'll put that all in favour.
All
the votes carried, thank you. And 12.14, Trunk Main Sea Emergency Pipe. Well, we were talking about that just a moment ago, Jake's Creek. So the recommendation here is to note the update report on the Trunk Main Sea Jack's Creek Emergency Pipe Replacement Works. Noel, if you could just...
It's just a flow on, of course, from what we just talked about. However, it's more to tidy up the budget implications. I just wanted to note councillors for wanting to ensure that we keep the budgetary system, so the original budget we had there that was adopted was 402.7 before anyone in council says, well, that's a lower value than what was provided earlier. There's a difference between including GST and excluding GST. So I'll just raise that point if anyone goes back in the papers earlier. That was actually a value that was reported as an inclusive of GST. So I've gone back to excluding GST because that's where all of the bills that come through that I've got to go through and ensure that they're correct. So I'm just reporting on ex-GST. So we came in on that with 341k. There was a slight increase in the pricing that was due to the manpower that they provided in a shorter period of time, more manpower in a shorter period of time, but the addition of an extra two excavators was the biggest one to enable us to make best use out of that extra workforce. So just reminding councillors that when this occurred, we were scrambling to try and get something done just before Christmas. We did as quick, or Lee did the best they could in saying, yes, I need so many people for a fortnight, and that's what we're aiming to do. They went out, they got more people, so I was happy to continue on and get that project finished rather than any delays that may have been incurred, get it in, get it done. So that is the reason why that additional funding was required above what their estimation was, and I think it was only about 4 or 5K or something. It's certainly not much or 7K, but it was well within the contingency that we applied for this job, which was 20%. We were down around 5% or something. It was very pleasing.
And what is the prospect of emergency grants and funding from external other sources?
Very, very low at the moment, especially after we've been through the... Well, we're still trying for funding, flood recovery funding from Yigara through the disaster recovery funding, noting that this was a breaking out system, but we'll keep pushing, but at this stage, that's not looking...
It's not looking good. Like it wasn't related to the flooding? It wasn't in any way? So
no, break it was occurred. Just a break in our system.
Yeah.
Breaking out.
So it's...
Emergency
works. Operation, yeah. Okay, yeah. Might be difficult. Yeah, looking at the map, it really highlights, you know, that there are some pinch points, aren't there, really? And that's one of them. Getting that link through there to Canoundra is really important. I'm just wondering whether or not, when we look at all the structure of the whole of the network, we might have to start thinking about sort of redundant lines, you know, a bit of redundancy in certain places to really, it's a lot of money, but we're certainly talking about that Nelda to Mahon link, which will start to create a grid similar to electricity grid where you can bring in power from a different direction. Same story here. Look, well done guys for getting in there and fixing that so quickly, and a bit of an emergency. Are there any other comments or questions related to that? Well done. Over a critical time, leading up to Christmas.
Big effort by
a lot of people. Yeah.
Just a quick point, Mr. Chair, we're also looking at those other another four crossings to see that how vulnerable they are. On those at the moment. So. Put plans in place to see, because the crossing was obviously replaced back in 2012 when we had those fires that came through.
Yep.
That's one of those five crossings. That's so obviously we've got another four there that may be susceptible to the same issue. Mm. So that's what we're doing.
And assessment of that at the moment. Okay, good. Okay, if there are no more comments or questions, so the recommendation is we note the update reports on the Trunk Main C Jacks Creek emergency pipe replacement works. Anyone would like to put that? Councillor Best, Councillor Nash, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thanks. 12.15, CGW Main Island Pipeline Augmentation Project updates. The recommendation is the council note the update reports on the CGW Main Artery Pipeline Augmentation Project. Back to you, Noel.
Yes, thank you, to the chair. This is just a tidy up of an earlier report that was put to council to take advantage of some funding. I know that the general manager was under immense pressure to sign so as we could actually gain acceptance of that funding, and he went out and was very proactive in ensuring that we weren't leaving ourselves open, that people our chairman in the loop. So this was something that the report was provided to council after the fact. That we had secured this and that 300K, I recall there was a lot of discussions around, was that enough? So it was enough. So, okay, but I'll, So this report, you've got the background which was in the previous report when we first put it forward. The update report is very small. We've gone out to tender, it was a selective tender process. We advised the successful tenderer back in January the 16th that they were successful to complete the project. We've had our initial meeting, so our kick-off meeting was last Monday,
mm-hmm.
so that was good, and we've set our goals and our milestones, and we are up and running with another one. So again, this will complement all our other projects that we've got, that we've been working with. So that if you look at the Central Water Three project, that's being fed into Goolagong by us replacing our augmentation of the main artery, includes front main B and C. It also includes our sub-regional water supply, so where we're looking at hydraulic modelling and flow rates, and so it's going to give us a good insight of what size pipe that will be sized to meet not just CTWs demand, but other points that are going to be able to, you know, bring water in from one section and push it out another end. So, yeah, all the work, even though Jack's Creek was a pain, the lessons learned out of Jack's Creek and how we can get water from Goolagong back into Canoundra gives us a real good understanding then, okay, well, we could actually improve that more by not only just putting in this pump station at Bangaroo and reinstating that, but how does that fit in with the size of the pipe that we could do if we want to move water, say, coming from falls into our bottom end if we've got problems with our bores at Goolagong. If we can tap into the Central Water Grid pipeline, we could actually bring water from falls. And how do we then get that water back up and into our system to be served? So we see this one as being sort of linking everything together. We invited out the representative of DQ to sit in on that kickoff meeting as well. We weren't discussing anything about finances, but how we're implementing it. So they're aware of what we see is really good value out of this project as a regional project rather than just for CTW. So that's kicked off. Big push now to try and get all those documents updated. At the end of the day, our expectation is we will be able to go to tender with a full suite of documents that can isolate maybe 10 k's or 20 k's of pipeline, having funding available. If we get extra funding components to it, or we start getting extra money coming in capital, we can actually pinpoint an area that we say, no, let's get that done, and that reflects back on the brakes and things like that we have in certain sections. So, you know, we could take it down to a 5K or a 1K area. So all that documentation, but it will be standard to go out for the upgrade for our augmentation. So instead of calling it an artery, I suppose I should have called it a main highway. So yeah, we've got the main highway going through there. The major roads coming in or minor roads linking in and being able to send the traffic in all directions.
So is there a bit of triaging involved about which are priority component, which are priority parts of the artery?
Yes.
As part of the outcome of this project.
And this will give us the basis to go for funding purposes to go, this is really critical for us.
Yeah.
And again,
it's the whole of that area which was
correct.
Had that water security deficiency index,
yes,
the risk score of 5. Yeah.
And it will also give council the opportunity to look at the sizing of piping, because if we look at CTW by itself, we source from here and we push water down there. So the size of the pipe is big up here, but by the time we get to the end, it's at a smaller size, which is the way this, the system was designed. Now we're going to be asking council to invest into a larger pipe size down further, but that larger pipe size is more of a regional requirement, not a CTW requirement.
Mm.
So it'll give the council a good opportunity to have some input into it. It'll give us good opportunities to meet with DQ and say this is a regional component. And again, this flows back onto this 50-50 split for funding or 25-75 if a greater component of the funding goes in for the regional group rather than just a 50-50.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'll just make a point on this, and this is something that Noel discussed with me the other day, is this puts a whole new light on some of the truck main renewals, because you may have been looking at a smaller pipe, as Noel's indicated, for CTW, but if you're going for a bigger pipe, you've got not only a renewal, but you've got an augmentation and a renewal happening at the same time, and potentially at a considerable cost to actually get those pipe sizes up, so you can have these linkages from other local government areas or other water utilities. So it does have particular implications going forward as to how the funding of those, whether there's grant funding available for trunk main work. Traditionally, I understand there hasn't been a lot of funding around for trunk main replacement, so that's something that we're going to have to look at perhaps going forward. That we may need to look at grant funding for some of our trunk main.
We tried to get, as Gav will remember, with Trunk Main K, we tried to get 50% from Safe and Secure, and they said, no, not for you. So, yeah, that's going to be a problem. And it's a problem when we regard ourselves as a regional authority and we come to these renewal projects. Do you do it just for ourselves, or you have a little eye to the potential future of supplying the region and build it bigger, and then we pay the cost ourselves? Well, shouldn't. I mean, the same thing applied to the 12-meg reservoir, in a sense. I know it's good for us, it's fantastic, but did we need a 12-meg reservoir? We could have got by with a 6-meg. 12-meg was something which Orange were very keen on because it's the peak daily demand of the combined systems. So there's a bit of an argument there that maybe we should have had to build something quite as big. Anyway, it's an issue which is not going to go away. Yeah. Well, I've got a floor, so to speak. We had three tenderers putting bids in.
Correct.
Premise, GFT and Hunter. Were all their prices much the same, or was there a big range?
A very big range.
Yeah. And Premise were the cheapest?
Premise was the highest and the lowest. The other two didn't. They withdrew some on HWA, pulled out early.
Did they say why?
Yes, but they were concerned to meet the time frame that was required. They didn't have the internal resources for that. And GHD, I'm still awaiting a reply of why they did not tender. We certainly followed them up to see if they were going to be tendered. So.
Okay, so it wasn't competitive in a way, but that's fine. So 180,000, I mean, I've made the point before that Prentice are very busy. They committed to do it by end of June, so that's good.
That's exactly what we had that meeting for on that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've been on them to finish the Corrigible job as well. It's taking ages and ages. And all of the same people get involved in these projects. So, anyway, if they've committed to do it for that money by June, that's good. And our 150,000 may maybe only be 100,000, as it turns out.
Well, and have we voted the money already? No. It says CTW's contribution of up to 150 can be funded. Have we already voted it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we voted that money. Okay.
Thank you for reminding me. Okay, if there are no further questions or comments, thank you to Noel for that. The recommendation here is the Council note the update report on the CGW Main RP Pipeline Augmentation Project. Would anyone like to move that motion?
Looking around the room again, Councillor Ewan, and seconded by Councillor Nash. Thank you. I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Thank you very much. And we are up to item 13, questions on notice. Are there any questions on notice?
No, I didn't receive any questions on notice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other business? No further business on... As there is no further business, I will call the meeting closed at 1:36 p.m.
Thank you.
And yes, I've just been reminded.